It's time for Windows Weekly, the first episode of 2014. And of course, Paul and Mary Jo are going to take a look at what's ahead for Microsoft in the new year. Stay tuned. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 343, recorded January 2nd, 2014. Throttled. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly.
She's on the fun, ladies.
Hello. Windows Weekly is on the air with Paul for what? And Mary Jo Foley. I was up a little late on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. No, you're forgiven.
But I feel good. I'm really glad to be back. We had so much fun. And thank you, Paul Thurrott of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and Mary Jo Foley of allaboutmicrosoft.com for being our first guests at what was early your time, like 7 a.m. East Coast time on New Year's Eve. Thank you. And then, Paul, I don't know if you saw, but Mary Jo Foley made me drink beer.
A terrible woman.
I forced him.
It was good. This is the thing that kills me. So did you tell Paul what beers that we tried, Mary Jo? Because there was some I think Paul would like. There were some hoppy ones that I know Paul doesn't like hoppy.
But there were some ones he would have liked.
Oh, yeah. There was some good stuff. Belgian
style.
He
had a Creek Lambic Paul would have liked a lot.
Really? No. Does he like?
He would like
You would like cherry flavored beer. Oh, it tastes like fruit punch.
I bought a bunch of stuff like that, and we haven't had all of it yet, but a bunch of different really fruity kind of lambic-y, they have different names, but, you know, sours this, and all kinds of
this
stuff.
This had cherries in it, right, Mary Jo? Or you had a different one.
Yeah, I was drinking a different one, but also a sour.
It was good. I'm not saying it was bad. It just wasn't beer.
and then we ended with a big porter or stout.
That was beer.
That was like chocolatey. Like I had a bourbon barrel.
It tasted like chocolate. It was like drinking chocolate, not milk, chocolate bread or cake or something. It was good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you and hello and welcome to the first show of 2014 for me and for Paul and Mary Jo, and the last show on a Thursday morning.
Great.
Because right after this, next week, we're moving you to Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern.
That's right.
1900 UTC. Yep. But I'm glad to see we are here just kind of for old time's sake.
I'm going to be sitting here on Thursday afternoons wondering why no one's calling me.
Paul, did we always do the show Thursday? Was it always Thursday afternoon?
Yeah, I think so.
So this is the first time we've ever changed the time.
I believe so.
It's bad programming to do that. And, you know, you see how networks always kill TV shows by moving from slot to slot and stuff like that. It's always a bad idea because people get used to it. But
this is what happened to Community.
Yes, exactly. Although I hear it's back better than ever.
Yeah.
Now that what's-his-name is back online.
Dan Harmon. Look at me with knowing something about
TV. You know.
I'm so embarrassed by that. Why did I say that out loud?
Somebody told me he did a really, I think Brian Brushwood told me, he did a really good podcast during the, you know, couple of years he wasn't at Community, in which he was just bitchy as hell.
Just complaining the whole time about networks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that.
Anyway, let us get to the news. The title of our show today, Snowmageddon. Because in a minute now, Mary Jo in New York and Paul in Boston will be swamped with snow. Oh, my God.
I think Paul already is. There he is.
There it is. It's falling down in New York.
Now, that's
Boston.
Boston. Yep.
That looks so pretty.
New York, not yet.
Doesn't it look pretty when that happens?
Yeah, it's great. I wish I was looking at it from California.
Yeah. It's so pretty. It looks so white and clean, and everything gets quiet because it's like a giant blanket over the landscape.
The snow plows and the...
Well, later in the day.
You know.
The worst thing...
It wasn't supposed to be bad today. We went out in it like idiots, you know. And then I wish I had never done that. It was just so awful out.
What? Your kids...
Driving around.
Your kids haven't become cynical and bitter like you, right? They still enjoy it.
Oh, my God, no. You know what? You want to do snow angels. This is completely off topic, but I have to tell... My son has like a season's pass to the local ski area, which is just a hill, not a mountain, you know, but it's very close.
Yeah, we had one of those in Providence too.
It's neat, right? No, but it's good because you can go.
It's handy.
Go
and, yeah, it's a short. And it's a short,
we
short
had a
ski,
day but... this. I think it was Sunday. It rained all day long, like really heavy rain. If this had been snow, we would have gotten 3 feet, 4 feet of snow. And he was out in the rain with his buddy, and they were the only people on this hill, except the people who worked there, for the entire day. And I give him credit for that, you know, for being young and being excited about stuff. And,
yeah.
And I vaguely want to cut his Achilles tendon. Just a form of punishment.
Daddy. But... he wakes you up at 3 a.m. It's snowing.
Yeah, he went out. Yeah, same thing yesterday. He was there till it closed.
That, you know, nice, youthful, exuberant. Of course, he is too young to have to shovel it, right?
Oh, no, he shovels.
Oh, and he still loves it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. That's great.
You don't have one of them electric shovels, do you?
No.
A snow blower. What are they?
We
use?
Get a little Fisher Price snowblower, and it works great if it doesn't snow much. But
it's great with flurries.
Hey, you push it into snow, and then it jams and shuts down. Nice. So you spend like 30 minutes getting it going for the first time.
I'm surprised iRobot hasn't made a snow Roomba.
Like a Roomba? Yeah, a Snoomba.
Snoomba. Those don't. They barely can pick up dust. I don't think they do so well with snow.
Especially this stuff.
Mary Jo, you don't have to handle it in any way. You live in an apartment building, right? The super gets right. That, right? The doorman,
yep,
whoever
it is.
We
just go out and it's magically cleared somehow.
And nice. And still, yet, you probably hate snow too.
No, I love the snow.
Yay, totally see? Snow. I think it's directly correlated to whether you have to clean it up or not.
And I also don't have to drive in it since I live in New York.
Yeah, driving so in it's not fun.
No. The only bad part is when it melts here, the puddles are astronomic. You step into a puddle and it's about 4 feet and your whole leg goes in. And...
snow's great until it melts.
Yeah.
That's really
that was
truth.
Like the one funny thing that Chevy Chase did on his short-lived TV show where he did one of those Walk of Fame things where he puts his hands in the cement and then mm-hmm. he fell forward. His whole body went into the sidewalk because it was like 5 feet deep. That's what New York, yeah, is like in the winter, because you can see a puddle and it's
you
like that
know.
Should be an inch deep.
You don't know. No, my galoshes go this side.
No idea.
Snow goes this. Water goes
you
this.
You could
side.
Just be lost in it. You
know? Nothing like a puddle. Giant puddle.
Giant.
Well, but the leaves are still blowing here, and it's a chilly 60 degrees.
Yes. Your hair seems to be blowing.
You
a little
can see.
Leo,
you can see. I've got the. I don't know what's. I'll use this as my headset says a bandana.
Actually, I don't know if you're going to be able to see this, but to bring this conversation full circle, I will try to show you that this is a pint glass that I got in Phoenix in the late 1990s.
Yeah. It says Therat.
A brewery that used to exist there called McFarland's. Yeah. And in here, which you can't really see, it says, "This I'll defend," which was their kind of slogan. And it was from Phoenix, Arizona. But somehow this glass, which has etched their logo into it, has made it like through... 15, 16 years. It's amazing.
And you bring this up. Why?
Because we were talking about beer.
Oh, beer. Oh, go. Okay. It does have your name
on
it.
It's like a pint glass from this brewery we used to visit regularly, local.
Well, it must have been really regularly. Did they engraved your name on it?
Yes. Yeah, we were big fans.
This is like Rattlin' Hum having the Mary Jo Foley mug. This is
right.
You
had
to earn that, I'm sure.
But it's from Arizona. I haven't lived in Arizona since 1999.
Oh, so it is kind of old.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how some glassware makes it a day and then some unaccountably just goes forever?
I was so sad I couldn't get my video working on New Year's Eve because Rattle and Hum let me take my mug out that night to bring it on the show. Because I told them I was doing the New Year's show.
Oh,
and I had it here, but they made me bring it back. So I don't know.
They retain ownership despite the fact that your name is on it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand that at all. It's not good to them. I mean, they can't.
Do you have trouble with Untappd on New Year's Eve?
Yeah, Untappd crashed like under the load.
Yeah.
Everybody was checking beers in. Times.
So typical. You know, people get to New Year's Eve. I don't know what beer to get. Let me go check on the web.
Nope. Not tonight.
People ended up drinking Heineken. That was the funniest thing. We start this beer tasting segment, and Mary Jo says, "Do you like beer, Steve?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, I love beer." She said, "What do you drink?" "I drink Heineken Light."
Yikes.
Yeah. He actually said that.
No, and then Mary Jo said, "No, I said, do you like beer?"
Yikes. It's Dutch.
He liked the lambic. He thought that was awesome.
Yeah, a beer digger would. It's like saying, I don't drink wine, and then giving them,
Heineken is Europe's Budweiser, Leo.
It's the Boone's Farm of beers, this lambic is.
We went on the tour of the Heineken factory in Amsterdam this summer.
Is it better in the Netherlands?
No, it's terrible.
Still bad there.
And we didn't drink any of the free giveaways. And my kids said, you know, I don't want to, you know, my son was like, I don't want to go on this tour. We can't drink beer anyway. And I said, no, don't worry about it. This stuff is water. You can drink it if you want.
It's delicious. And all the little Dutch children drink it. I felt terrible because... Well, I'm not even going to bring it up. We had a little Dutch boy come on the show during New Year's Eve, and I felt terrible. And I said something inappropriate, of course, knowing me. And
then you've been on TV for 27 hours at the time.
I'm not going to. I have no excuse. But I said something terrible, and then his father showed. It's like, you know, he's not just him here. It's like, oh God. All right, enough of this tomfoolery. Let us.
Yes.
I should mention we do have an Audible ad a little later on. So, Paul, ready your book recommendation, the first book of the new year. But, you know, we talked last week about Microsoft. This was the 2013 was the banner year for Microsoft. So much stuff, so much amazing stuff. But what is 2014 going to portend?
I think it's going to be another year of insanity.
We know there'll be a new CEO because we've been told that.
We do.
Do you think a new CEO will change the company much, or will they pick somebody that's going to maintain?
You know, whoever comes in has to basically agree with what the plan is now that's in place, I think. Because the board, the search committee, they're all kind of backing the way they've reorganized the company into the one Microsoft and all that.
So, that's going to narrow it down, though, a little bit. I mean, not everybody would necessarily sign on under those conditions.
Right. And, you know, there are all these people speculating maybe Bill and Steve will step down off the board. And if that happens, maybe that will allow for bigger changes. But there's been no indications from anyone I know that that's about to happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's going to start the year off probably. I'm betting they're going to name the CEO in January. Not next week, obviously, since that's CES timing. But I'd say early, early in the year.
Soon.
Yep, soon.
And who are our candidates these days? I said probably Satya Nadella and Stephen Elop, the insiders, seem to me to be more likely than an outsider.
Alan Mulally is still in the running.
Generalissimo Francisco Franco. It does not go away.
He's not going away.
Never stepped forward and said no, like the board wanted. The Ford board wanted him to do.
That
fuels the rumors.
Yep.
It does.
I didn't say no yet.
There was a crazy rumor the week of Christmas that a couple of people mentioned to me, because I don't know if you guys caught this, but the CEO of Hyundai North America abruptly stepped down and no one knows why. And people were saying, what if they're going to pick this guy?
Hyundai. It's like a Ford, only cheaper.
It's like exactly. I'm like, wait. And the guy who it is, his name is John Krafcik. Krafcik. He actually is an engineer by profession. So, of course, that started some crazy speculation. I haven't heard he's actually
on any lists prior to quitting?
No. But
Azaktar is going to be the next CEO of Ford.
Nice. I heard that.
Everybody who quits, just like, okay, they must be in the running.
Everybody's in the running. Paul and I are in the running.
I would like to run Microsoft.
I feel like I'd be better in a Darth Vader type role.
you know,
like maybe Mary Jo could run the company and I could be like the enforcer.
Chainsaw Paul Thurrott. Yeah.
You've been throttled.
You've been throttled. Ooh, I like it.
Nice.
I like it. So is it really serious that we could really see Alan Mulally? I mean, I would love Alan Mulally as a CEO because he's a great CEO, but geez Louise, he's kind of old.
He's getting older by the day.
Yeah.
I think every time we talk about him, he's 78 years old now. That man is 87.
Great.
How old is he really?
You know, I think he's 68. He's 60. Isn't he?
Yeah. Late 60s. He was ready, and he was ready to retire. He was planning. Last time I talked to him, I don't talk to him anymore. He's. I guess that one time I brought the laptop into the meeting and I streamed it. He never again. He'll talk to me. But
yes, right.
You were banned.
Never learned. Did you say it's like riding a bike?
Just feels so good in my hands. I guess if I were going, I talked to him last time. I talked to him was at CES last year. I guess if I went to CES this year, I could talk to him. But at the time last year, he said I'm preparing to retire.
Right.
I am grooming my successor. I am ready to move on from Ford. Maybe he meant retire and take a, you know, kind of a part-time job running Microsoft. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, a little company.
Did they know? Did we know? But we didn't know about this last year, right? I mean.
No. No, it was way before Ballmer said anything.
I think we would have been talking about him and Microsoft.
No, I think he genuinely wanted to get out of the business. Yeah. And, you know, I think he even said he wants to spend time with his grandkids.
Yeah. It was great.
But he has a home in Seattle.
Wait a minute. What?
He has a home.
He does? Is it a palatial estate?
I don't know. Unlike you, I've never met the guy. But he does have a home in Seattle. Because he used to run Boeing, right? So, yeah.
That's right. His previous job was Seattle.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. So, you know, if it does end up being him, I could see it being something like this. He's positioned as the guy who takes over in the short term while they're grooming some other candidates who aren't quite ready yet, and he's going to be their mentor. I could see them kind of framing it that way. Not saying I agree, but I could see them do that.
Grooming it for Sacha?
Maybe for Sacha, maybe Elop. For Tony Bates.
Tony Bates. I think I don't think Tony Bates is, I think of Tony Bates as an insider. Of course, he nominally is, but Skype is recently acquired and has been autonomous within Microsoft. I don't know how much Tony Bates. I guess they transferred him over, didn't they? Now
he's running business development, which is a pretty responsible position, and also the evangelism team. So he's doing a new job right now inside Microsoft. And if you notice, he never is allowed to talk to the press. I can't remember the last time he was allowed to talk to anybody.
I think that's because a lot of the people in the press actually use Skype, and we'd have some rather embarrassing questions to ask him.
Skype has gotten worse and worse. In fact, today, because we have so many problems with Skype and Mary Jo, we're trying a little experiment. We've put Mary Jo on the left, and we'll see if that improves Skype.
Amazingly, that seems to work.
We're doing a few other things.
That's how you know Skype.
I have some good luck charms. I'm like circling around my laptop.
Little voodoo doll sticking pins in Tony Bates. Actually, at some point, I would like to have a conversation with you if you think that Microsoft... I know one of the things Microsoft is doing is moving Skype onto the Azure cloud, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And that process could be part of the unreliability we've experienced lately in Skype. I don't know. Just speculating.
Yeah. I don't know.
Speaking of speculation, what about that Alan Mulally?
What does he think about Skype?
What does he think?
No.
So is Bates, am I wrong? Is Bates a good possibility?
I think you're right about Sacha. Sacha is definitely on the short list. Yeah. Bates, Stephen Elop, Alan Mulally. And after that, we don't really know, I think.
Yeah. Now, this year, the Nokia phone division will officially become a part of Microsoft. That's been approved by every regulatory body from here to
India.
China hasn't approved it. Right. And China has to approve it?
Well, they do.
What?
Yeah, actually they do. Sure.
What?
It's the biggest cell phone market in the world.
It's worse than the UN Security Council. It's like everyone has veto power.
Yeah.
Well, right. I mean, there's a story there that perhaps there's a little bit of inside baseball occurring where people want to protect the Chinese cell phone carriers from, cell phone makers and wireless carriers from this, you know, new competitor. That this could be a problem for them. So we'll see how that goes. But I assume that will go through.
Yeah, but what's going to be interesting is once it is approved, Microsoft gets 30,000 more employees.
Which is just what they need.
Going crazy edition.
Right? Like more people.
Yeah. And that also means that Microsoft can officially start integrating the Nokia manufacturing and distribution and other parts of the teams that they've acquired as part of the transaction. So then we're going to start seeing what it looks like in terms of what Microsoft's product lineup looks like. Because right now, you know, there's the Nokia tablet, the 2520, and there's the Surfaces. And we're not sure which of those things are going to survive, if all of them are. how phones are going to now be changing once Nokia actually becomes part of Microsoft, and who, in terms of the other Windows Phone players, stays as part of the ecosystem. So there's a million kind of what-if scenarios and variables that we don't really know until the transaction is official and things start shaking out. So, yeah, lots of uncertainty.
It's fascinating, though, isn't it, to watch?
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
It's going to be a crazy 2014.
It is.
And we'll be covering it all right here on Windows Weekly. The gags and laughs come fast and furious right. in this fun-filled
themselves.
Battle of the CEOs. If once the thing happens, will the Nokia handsets be the same? Will we still have Lumias? Will we still have...
That's the question, isn't it?
I mean, I hope we will. Those are the Asha, best of Nokia, class. They're the best of breed. Nokia. And there's no Surface phone.
Right.
Unless they rebrand it.
I think they keep the brands the way they are.
They should.
Surface is the devices. Surface is an okay
They
brand.
Have to recognize they're in a consumer market, and a consumer does not want to or need to or, in fact, do a very good job at understanding these things.
Right.
Lumia, that's a brand. Don't mess with it. You don't change, you know.
By the way, it is notable that these things are all brands like that, that are names, that are made-up names, right? They're just names. And they are not good brands, but they're recognizable, you know. Microsoft doesn't at least yet make a product that's called something like the Microsoft Surface HSN-0477W.
That's a Lenovo name.
Which is like a lot of HP, you know, yeah. A lot of companies do stuff like that. Yeah. And I think it's important that they keep it simple, whatever they do. These brands, at least they're brands.
They should call it the Ford Lumia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there was a Ford Lumia, wasn't there?
If there wasn't, they missed a rare opportunity. Windows Phone 8.1 Blue debut.
Right. This is something we've been waiting for a long time. It's the last of the blue wave. So that's Windows Phone 8.1.
They made it just in time. If they'd waited any longer, it would have been Threshold.
Exactly.
Right. Well, and then it will be slightly Threshold.
Yeah, so this is the last of the blue wave. And so this is supposed to be a pretty meaty release of Windows Phone. One thing it's going to have, we're pretty sure, is the Notification Center gets added to Windows Phone. Also, Cortana, which is Microsoft's answer to Siri, basically, but a little different from it in a couple ways. That also is going to be part of this release we keep hearing. So there's going to be some pretty big feature components to this. And we're not sure if there'll be a developer preview first. I would think there would be, and maybe around the time of Mobile World Congress, I would think. And then spring has always been kind of the consistent time frame that we've heard for Windows Phone Blue to debut or start debuting to customers.
Yeah. And not coincidentally, in early April, there is a Build conference. Which could be tied to that and maybe tied to some early information about the Threshold generation of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, that's going to be a big deal. And then, you know, what we don't really know after that is what happens with Windows Phone the rest of 2014. Will there be these ongoing continued kind of incremental updates like we have with Windows Phone this year, kind of like update one, update two? I would think that's what's going to happen. Because Threshold isn't really supposed to start rolling out until 2015. And I can't imagine they're going to just let Windows Phone sit there for a year. So I think you'll see
even
that.
They just did kind of do that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Although we get some little updates this year, right?
We get true.
Updates
that's
1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and also at the time Windows Phone Blue comes out around spring, there's supposed to be an update to Windows 8.1 that's internally called Windows 8.1 Update 1. And what we think is going to be in that are some changes at the API level to make Windows Phone and, Windows Phone Blue and Windows Blue, which is Windows 8.1, more in alignment. So that they're getting increasingly more common from a code standpoint, which means over time they'll actually be able to have the same store, although I don't think that's going to happen this calendar year. And the development situation will be better for people who are trying to build for both platforms because they'll be sharing more of the common code base. And you, and supposedly you'll be able to use more of the same APIs, same tool set to develop for both platforms. So it's a step along that unified platform road this year.
Follow the unified platform road. Follow the unified platform road. Follow.
It's not as roll trippingly off the tongue.
It doesn't.
I think we could get there.
One of the things that's been kind of really important and we're waiting for is new Office apps designed for the Metro generation.
It's like a Pepsi ad.
It is.
And we're getting closer, right? We've got Touch First Office apps. Did they just come out?
Nope, they're not out yet.
But they're coming.
They're coming.
I'm excited. Great.
This is Gemini, the thing that we've been talking about. It feels like for months and months. It has been months and months. Gemini are the Touch First versions of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint.
Have you seen them? Second gen-
I have not seen them, but I've talked to people who've seen them.
Are they?
I don't know if Paul has seen them.
So my question would be, and I'm sure everybody else would ask, are they taking existing Office and slapping, it's like a magnifying glass on the...
No.
Or are they actually really redoing?
Here's some of the things to think about. Internet Explorer in Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 is this kind of common app that has a Metro version and a desktop version. They share rendering engine. You know,
you think they're going to go that route?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. In other words,
I hope not. That's confusing.
Yep. The other one would be to think of them as kind of a on-prem or like a locally installed version of what's available in the Office web apps. But then you have to make concessions to the Metro style UIs. Do they use app bars? Do they use something like what we have in OneNote Mobile on Windows 8, which is kind of a cool app? You know, there's a lot of questions. I've not seen it, so I'm very curious which route they take.
Right. And remember, some people said they might use that radial dial thing that we saw.
Right. With the OneNote,
Right. So that might be the way.
We see it now in OneNote, right?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting, I'm not saying that's the UI of the future, but it's
it feels more
one
stylus-y.
Way to overcome the constraints of a touch interface and present a lot of UI when you need it.
Mm-hmm. It's more stylus-y to me than it is. I mean, that's in fact what Samsung does on the Note 3 with a stylus. Mm-hmm.
From what I've heard, I haven't heard this is like you take Word and you dumb it down. It's not like that. It's more they rebuilt these supposedly from the ground up to be touch first. Yeah. And then and so supposedly, again, I'm saying because this is just from sources and Microsoft has never confirmed this. Once they have this out for Windows and for their Surface tablets and any Windows PCs that need it. Then they're going to come out with versions for iPad and Android tablets. And I think that may be this year as well, but probably towards fall or end of year, unless they've decided to change that timetable.
And they can't wait much longer, you know?
They can't.
At some point, they're going to come out with Office and the world is collectively going to yawn and then move on. I mean, it seems like this needs to happen.
Yeah, it's really going to be about how they do it. And, of course, it's going to get the same complaints no matter what that the Ribbon got. I mean, it's a major UI update.
Sure.
And that may be kind of incentive for Microsoft to do this bifurcated product that Internet Explorer is. But I hope that they don't do that. I just feel like it's confusing to real people.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
How long did it take him to do the ribbon? That's a long undertaking to rethink the UI.
It's not just do the ribbon, but get it right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so they shipped it in Office 2007, and then I would say probably 2010. Well, actually, it wasn't fully implemented until 2010, and then they made improvements again in 2013. And so, you know, realistically speaking, that took whatever that is, 6 years or something.
Yeah. 6 years is not – Microsoft does not have 6 years.
No. You want to get this one right.
But, you know, I think we often, especially – well, you guys don't because I think you're more on the inside. But a lot of people like me who are on the outside of any company often underestimate the difficulty, the resources, how hard the company's trying, but how hard it is to do. And
yes.
You don't – a new UI doesn't spring forth – from the head of Zeus.
Well,
and maybe if it would, that would be a good thing, but it doesn't. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, you're right. Yeah. You're right. That's, it's, so it's you gotta, easy to you, complain and
it's really
explain how you would do it if only you could do it.
But it's a lot. Right. I mean,
but it's, yeah, the realistic.
And you don't just throw money at this. You have to find really good people who are good thinkers. Yep. And there is a timeline that you just can't speed up.
Right.
You can work as hard as you can.
Right.
So it's going to be challenging. But but I think if Microsoft's serious about touch, the pride of their product line, their number one app has to be touch enabled.
Yep.
Right.
Challenging.
Right.
So we'll see it when, you think?
Summer maybe has been the rumor for a while that we'll see it on Windows and then late fall for iPad and Android tablet.
Yeah, and I've been very quick, and it's a little facile to say, oh, they'll never do it, or they'll take a long time doing it for the iPad because they want to promote Surface. But it could very well be. It's just a hard thing to do.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I've actually asked around a little bit, like, why are you guys waiting? Are you consciously holding this back? And they said, you think we're holding this back? You're crazy.
No,
you
know? They want to do it. I believe they want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's like, we're trying to do it, but we have to start from scratch.
We're almost at the point now where they should just release these things concurrently. I mean, a year and a half ago when they were preparing Surface, the original version, you could make this argument, you know, put this on Windows because that's how you promote the platform. Things have changed a lot in the last year and a half. You know, Windows is not Microsoft's biggest business. It's not even its second biggest business. I mean, you kind of reach a point where if you're, you know, being real about being a devices and services company, that your biggest service in some ways for end users is Office, and it needs to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's time to stop worrying about this other stuff. You know, you just need to get that out there.
Yeah. And, you know, they may decide to do that because so many things are in flux right now there. The teams are all under new management. The Office team considers as part of its charter now to support all platforms. It's not just Windows first and everything else second.
They do a great job with that, too. If you follow the releases of their mobile apps, they update these things all the time. And if you further think about things like the SkyDrive app as being part of this little circle, because it's, you know, part of Office 365 Home Premium and so forth, those things, you know, they get updated all the time. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. It's got to be one of the biggest teams inside Microsoft.
Yeah. Last I heard, over 5,000 developers on
Office.
Wait
a minute. What?
Yeah.
What? Wait a minute.
You know, because
5,000?
Think what Office is, though. It's not just Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote. There's Visio. There's Access. There's Office 365, right? There's a ton of other stuff.
Web apps. There's all the mobile apps. You need to have different people with different skills putting the same or context-specific features on different mobile devices.
Wow.
I mean, there's so much to it.
I had no idea.
Sure.
That's a big team to manage.
Yeah, there used to be 5,000 people, developers on Windows, I had heard, around the time of Windows 7, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's, Microsoft must have internally some hellacious project management stuff. Wow, and they ain't using GitHub, I don't think. I mean, this is serious stuff.
Yeah, it's they're big teams.
Yeah. There's a classic in the programming called The Mythical Man Month.
Yeah.
Which talks about how difficult it is to scale programming. You can't say, well, this product's going to take 3 man months to write, so we'll hire 3 people, and then we'll have it in a month. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
Microsoft
discovered this during the development of Longhorn.
Right, which they scrapped. In fact, that's Steve Ballmer told Mary Jo Foley.
Well, that's when it just got too big,
his
right?
His greatest regret.
In the past, it worked, you know. This group's going to do this thing. This group's going to do this thing. These guys do this.
And then just pile all it together.
That worked fine when you had 5 things.
Yeah.
But when Longhorn had 127 different things and they were all working on these things separately and threw it in the pot together, it wasn't a delicious stew. It was some kind of a sludge. You know, and that's what happens sometimes.
Are the project management tools in Visual Studio the same ones they use corporately, or they must have something even...
They probably have other tools as well, right? And they use Team Foundation, Service. They use a lot of their own tools, but they have custom tools developed for their internal projects. Yeah.
By the way, it's not coincidental that Microsoft has a lot of team development tools,
right?
Whether they're for office productivity type things or for developers and so forth. And every time they talk about that stuff, I know and I think to myself, they made that for them.
Yeah,
you know, this is something they understand. You
it's
know,
really
getting big teams of people to collaborate. Right?
It's just really mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Wow. 5,000. That would be a great trivia question because I don't think anybody would go that would guess that high.
It's
you're
one
right.
Person
there are many
for every feature in office.
Yeah, right.
I'm responsible for cut and paste.
It would.
Yeah, I mean that people have the one thing that they do right.
That's completely sensible. The problem, of course, is as you say, stitching it all together into a cohesive whole that all works with one another. That was the point of object-oriented programming: is that somebody could write a black box with a well-defined interface. And then they wouldn't interact. It wouldn't be a problem. But that, I don't
guarantee you, someone on Longhorn thought that was going to be their object-oriented operating system.
Right.
And that's exactly how they were going to do it.
Right.
You know, I guarantee that was part of it. Objective file system and all the baloney.
It's such an old code base. I can't imagine that they are working in that kind of environment. It's got to all interact, which makes it just a hairball.
Yeah. And then the other part of the hairball is having to support older versions, right? I mean,
well,
there's
still
a lot of people running those older versions, right?
This is somewhere, this is a place that Microsoft, well, I guess they can't. Huh?
You know, it's interesting. You just
got to cut the cord.
It's interesting, Mary Jo, that you just said that because when they switched to the Ribbon UI in Office, they didn't offer the toolbar one as an off fallback, right? And remember in Windows, they always did that until Windows 8. They always offered the old way of doing things, you know, the start menus and all that. They always offered a way to go back to the previous one. Windows 8 was the first one where they didn't do that. And the same guy kind of ran both of those teams, right? The team that did the Ribbon in Office that didn't offer a fallback, and then the team that made Windows 8 and didn't offer a fallback, you know, had many of the same people responsible.
And they're all gone.
Well, now they are, yeah. I never really saw it that way until you just said that, but it's an interesting parallel.
You know, I look at Apple, which, and part of this is because Apple really doesn't have a presence in business, and business is where legacy is king.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even the 3-year-old iPad, 3 years old, will not work with the current operating system.
Mm. Right.
I can't think of any product in history that was obsoleted in 3 years.
They're very rapid moving forward, and they're very aggressive, you know.
And they all put up with it, but I don't understand why, frankly.
Because they can get away with it.
Yeah, they get away with it.
The only time that Apple made any concerted effort to accommodate the past was in the transition to Mac OS X.
Right. And they had the classic.
They transitioned people from an Apple II type system to the Mac without any real crossover at all.
No, and G4 to Intel, they also were pretty good at making that
transition. Yeah, that's true.
But they did it in a different way. They provided... compatibility boxes, but it wasn't like, oh, we're going to make sure the current version works on all our hardware. Yep. It really was temporary, and they pulled the plug on both of those.
I think there's an understanding that when people buy a computer, they hold on to it. There's a weird thing that occurs with these devices where people buy them over and over again. And so I think Apple and other, it's not just Apple, everyone does this. I think they know they can move people forward more quickly just by a new device because the device is the thing. You know, with a computer, in many ways, it's the operating system is the thing. The platform on which the apps run is the thing. It's just a different, it's so awful in so many ways because it makes everything so disposable, you know, as we move forward to this kind of model. Well, so let's talk about Chromebooks.
We are going to get to that, I'm sure. But
speaking of disposable.
Yeah. And yet, I've seen a number of articles. Maybe you can debunk this. I don't know. Is this on your?
Easily.
Yeah, it's on our list.
Okay, we'll save it because it's the NPD story, and easily. You're going to talk about that. All right, but we want to
finish. I'll do it blindfolded and with my back to the microphone.
Why are you on that? Go ahead.
That's good. I made my kids watch a Three Stooges marathon the other day.
That actually was my cowardly line, but thank you.
No, I know, but I mean, it's okay. It reminded me of that era.
Old black and white stuff.
Yeah.
Did they like it?
No.
Not even the boy.
Universally, the response was, this is stupid.
It is stupid. That's why we love it.
Right. Sit down and enjoy it.
Yeah,
my wife tried to explain to me it was a guy thing.
But some people have said it's a guy thing. You know, I'm starting to get somebody's hair. It's not Moe's, but it's starting.
I'm sorry. My brain is a non sequitur today. I'm sorry. I'm somewhere. There's some incredibly intelligent stuff in the Three Stooges. I should say intelligent humor in the Three Stooges. There was a line that was something like, every time you think, humanity weeps. You know, this lines like that I just think are...
Every time you think humanity weeps is really kind of sophisticated.
Yeah, it's...
They had to throw something in for the grown-ups. I presume the Three Stooges was intended for children.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're shorts that come before the movie on Saturday afternoons when you paid a nickel to go to the theater. I don't remember those days, but I've
sorry.
New Surface devices. No, we are not going to get a Surface Mini. This is a joke.
No, we will.
Really?
We're going to.
Yeah, like a mini 8 inches, like the Venue, or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like an 8-inch Surface.
Will there be a 7-inch? Anything?
Well, Paul was the one who wrote this originally, right? You were the first one, I think, who heard there be an 8-inch Surface, or did you say 7? I can't remember.
For this.
It was going to be this year.
Surface 2 line. Yeah, it was originally part of that generation.
Right.
Got pulled very late in the development.
Oh. Yeah. Because I think the 2520. We like the Venue.
Yeah, I think the Venue 8 Pro is probably the, you know, or, well, any of these are fine. But, I mean, I think that's the one I think most people are aware of.
But we're talking about Pro, right? Not RT.
Right.
That's what we don't know.
Ah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. On the Venue 8 Pro. Yes.
The 8 is the Pro.
The original plan for the Surface Mini was Qualcomm chipset,
right,
which is not what's in the Surface 2, running Windows RT 8.1.
Okay.
Not Windows 8.
Right.
Whatever.
No, that makes sense. I think the Venue is a specialized product that is not going to be for mass consumption.
So them pulling it back is interesting because if they ship this thing in the spring, it's not like the chipsets are going to change, right? I mean, we would have to wait until next Christmas, or do you know?
Well.
Let's look closely at Mary Jo and see what she's got up her sleeve.
Yes.
Let's talk about a piece of news that just broke while we were on the show.
Well.
Tom Warren's found out somehow that Microsoft has changed the chipset in Surface Pro 2 tablets to a faster Intel chip.
Intel.
This is for people getting
the Pro.
In other words,
this
you send yours in to get it fixed and you get a new one.
Right, and you get a new and better and faster. So they can change the chipsets in these things on the fly.
Wait a minute. Surface 2 Pro now because you could get a better one when you bring it in?
What I mean is these things don't change every 3 months, right? Like
no, they don't.
The specs,
the Tegra 3 comes out 1 year and a Tegra 4 comes out 1 year later.
Very true. But back to the Surface Mini, the rumored Surface Mini. Like Paul said, originally it was going to be an ARM-based machine, but then there have been new rumors since that it's going to be Intel-based, possibly Bay Trail. And then there have been rumors that they might do both, an Qualcomm and a Bay Trail. I don't know why they would do that, but... Yeah, so we don't know what chipset's going to be in that thing, but I think we are definitely going to see one.
I think there are people at Microsoft who are holding a candle for this ARM thing, and they really want it to succeed. Yeah. And it's just one of those things that the market is saying no to, you know.
But the reason they want it to succeed is because battery life is that the.
It's reasons that nobody cares about. I really don't think it's necessary to achieve what they want to achieve.
I'm not sure because it. Do you really want to run Intel-based legacy applications, say, like Photoshop on an 8-inch tablet?
No. But it's nice to have that option, right? I mean, in other words, if keeping me from moving from my gigantic Windows desktop to a modern world where I can have these other devices is I want a tablet, but I have all this stuff in iTunes, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a big blocker for me. And if I can't run iTunes on this little tablet, it's not really worth it to me because that's how I watch movies or whatever. You can run iTunes on that thing. And is it going to be an awesome experience?
No.
Probably not. But, I mean, at least you can. And I think it's just for the transition. You know, I don't remember who it was. You will remember who did this. Someone wrote a post sometime in the past year where they were talking about, you know, Windows RT doesn't have to be ARM. You could do Windows RT on x86, right?
That was Hal Berenson who wrote that.
Hal Berenson, thank you. And, yes, I mean, so... As part of this transition, you provide these versions of Windows that do provide that backwards compatibility. And as the platform gets more mature, eventually you provide versions that don't.
I'm intrigued.
And those
by
versions could still be x86.
What would it take to make an x86 RT?
Well,
I mean, is it exactly the same? I mean, I don't.
Yeah. Well, mostly,
Remember with Windows Threshold, we've already heard the rumor that there's going to be a version of that that runs on both Intel and ARM. And it's going to be very consumer focused. It's going to be for a certain class of device that doesn't necessarily need to have the legacy apps running. It's more a consumption device than a creation device, to use the old terminology. But I think it can be done.
And it gets better. I mean, it already has happened.
Right. You take the desktop away and you say, hey, if you need the desktop, you're going to use this SKU of Windows. And if you don't, you're going to use this one. And it doesn't matter what the chip is.
Literally part of the pro SKU. And by the way, all of a sudden, then you have a real differentiator, right? I mean, between core and pro, that makes sense.
Right.
You know, that's fine.
And it's much easier to explain to people. It's like, do you need legacy apps? Okay, buy this.
That
if
is
you don't
pro.
Need them,
that's
buy
the,
this.
That right. says pro.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Hmm.
But so yeah. We'll see. And the other Surface we know is coming for sure is the LTE, Surface 2 with LTE built in. We know that's going to be early 2014 if they're still on schedule for that. So that's also a new Surface device. Not really brand new, but
I haven't heard anything specific about new Surface devices for 2014, but I did hear something very vague. And this would be from the source of a lot of the stuff I've talked about Surface in the past, which was simply that people will be surprised by how much Surface stuff occurs this year. That if you look at year one, where it was two devices, and then in a couple, you know, covers, and then year two was two more devices, and then a bunch of more accessories. Year three is going to be a much bigger deal again, and so we'll see. You know, it's very vague and.
We've also got the peripherals too. We haven't even talked about that aren't out yet. So the power keyboard is coming right to the Surface, and also the docking station will be back supposedly in stock because that was only very limited.
Has that just been out of stock? Is that what happened? They put it out for a little while. Yeah.
So those are both coming probably Q1.
It's very disappointing. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I have to take this.
Qualcomm calling. So Intel has low, I mean, the Scale processor and so forth, they have low power ARM-like arc. In fact, isn't Intel doing ARM chip?
I sort of get the point of ARM, right? Because you're making a device, and you need it to actually behave like a device. It's that media center thing. You can't be watching TV with a remote control and have a Windows dialog box pop up in the middle of your TV screen. It ruins the experience. And, you know, Windows tablets are kind of the same thing, especially the small tablets. You don't want to ever have to go to the desktop. You don't want to have that experience. And, you know, obviously the metro side of the house, the modern side has to mature for that to happen. And I think it has. I think we're just about there. I think the next version is the one where they could make that break if they wanted to. But it's not just that. It's will something running on the system impact the reliability of the system, the battery life of the system? Does it have little tendrils everywhere in the system that are doing different things that you can't keep track of and you can't control? I mean, this metro thing is a self-contained environment. It's it's a modern, literally modern, mobile computing environment. And so x86 opens the possibility of compatibility, but it also opens opens up to the dark side of that as well, which is applications that run amok and destroy all your resources. We call these applications like
Chucky.
Photoshop.
We call them Chucky. One of the things that, by the way, just so you're clear what we're up to, we're talking about 2014.
By the way, we are like, for a week in which nothing happened,
we
are approximately 4% into our list.
Yeah. You always find plenty to talk about.
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Now, there's always something to talk about. This is predictions. Wearables, will there be a Microsoft watch? They did a watch, a spot watch. Mm-hmm. Had one. Don't have it anymore.
Yep.
Which is good because the spot server was taken down a year ago.
That's right. Yeah. Remember that? Mm. Yep.
This time a year ago.
There's rumors that they're going to do another watch. And A lot of people were thinking it was going to be in 2013, and I've seen even more speculation in 2014 is when this is going to show up. I just got somebody suggesting recently maybe not till 2015 because maybe it's connected with Threshold. Yeah. And that they need that release to do this. So I don't know. I think they are trying to do something. I mean, they're also, we know, trying to do things around glasses. We saw that leak about the Fortaleza glasses that originally were just about the Xbox.
It feels so and me too.
It does.
I mean, Google announced glasses. Oh, okay, we're doing glasses. Yeah. Apple rumors about a watch emerge. Galaxy Gear.
Well, actually, and I don't think the Microsoft glasses thing was had anything to do with Google, right? That was part of a leak about the X.
Yeah.
It was Xbox.
It was in that slide stack about the next Xbox.
It comes out around the time of Google Glass, so people make that connection. But
right.
And of course, if Microsoft were to release something today called Microsoft Glasses,
I'm
waiting for the drone. There's got to be a drone somewhere.
Microsoft drone.
Yeah, got to be. But yeah, supposedly they've talked up wearables a lot, and Julie Larson Green's team supposedly has people working on that. The devices team, and there's also a team inside of the Windows group under Alex Kipman that's working on the software for whatever these wearables are. We just don't know what they are. We don't know what form they're going to take or when they're going to come out, but they're working on
them.
It's
just going to be a ribbon.
A ribbon that you tie that you put around.
Or it could be
or your neck.
A wearable paperclip.
Yeah.
It could be.
What did SPOT stand for? Trivia question.
I should know this. Personal object technology.
Oh, wow. Mm. Wow. Mary Jo for the win. Well, she didn't get the S, but...
What was the S?
I don't know. Anybody in the chat room? Do you know?
What was the .NET they called? They had a special version of .NET that ran on this thing, and it was called... Micro.NET or...
It has kind of name. It was something.
Micro.NET.
It was, yep.
Maybe it was just .NET Micro. Or...
Smart personal objects technology.
That's right.
Yes, was smart. For some reason, you forgot that it was smart.
Right. I did, weird. Somehow.
Can't understand. Probably because we had them.
We all had them.
Yeah.
What was it? Was he using the FM radio station?
It had MSN Direct service. Yeah.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. MSN it was Direct. Using radio technology.
It was like a public radio station.
Smart. I mean, it's smart. It is smart in that sense, but... A lot of the stuff, you know, and Spot was one of these things. Some other Microsoft projects that didn't live very long, like the smart displays were kind of like this, where you kind of, someone sits there and explains it to you, and you nod your head, and you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, you know, like, yeah. And you don't really ever, you know, you don't get all excited about it. You're just like, yeah, okay,
That seems like a good idea.
No, they tell you these stories. Like, imagine you're at a football game, and... You're watching a football game because you love football and you're there, but you want to know what's going on in the other games. So you could get these little micro.
You look at your watch.
Things on your watch. It'll tell you what's going on, little notifications. Yeah. And you're like, yeah.
But it's not, you don't go, I got to have that.
Right. I mean, that was the thing.
I can't wait till that happens.
It was never like, oh my God.
I don't blame Microsoft. A lot of new technologies like that. Glass. Maybe I'm an outlier here, but I got to have that.
No, you're not an outlier. I have a hard time not hitting everyone I see wearing those. And I cannot deny it.
It eated up the news cycle.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's the story. That and Jeff Bezos' drones.
No, but Microsoft has done things that have been very... I mean, I remember seeing Freestyle, which became Media Center for the first time, and I was extremely excited. This was exactly what I wanted. Like, as soon as I saw this, I think the greatest... kind of compliment you can pay to a technology product that you've seen but don't have yet, which is you've made everything I have now suck. You know, like you've ruined what I have. Like I'm going to go home and have to watch TV now, and that stinks because I want this. You know, and that was like that. And, you know, Spot was not like that.
Yeah.
So Spot, we're going to do it again.
It's back.
I know.
Here's Spot.
Mike Baz remembers. It's the .NET Micro Framework that was part of it.
.NET Micro Framework.
Yep. You know, there was a Microsoft product recently that everybody said, gotta have that. Then they got it. And that was about it. I'm thinking Kinect, which was at the time the most widely adopted new consumer technology in history.
Yes, and the percentage of people who owned Xboxes that got a Kinect... was like the highest attach rate ever.
Yeah.
Whatever that percentage was, it was well over 50%. It was some crazy number of people. And then they stopped talking about it because I don't think anyone ever bought one ever again. Like they got it. Yeah. Everyone got it that wanted it. And then most people stopped using it almost immediately. Yeah. By the way,
Xbox One Kinect adoption, 100%.
It's 100%. But actually, I have to say that the new one is pretty great.
It works.
It's
too bad that wasn't the first Kinect, frankly.
Sure.
Although Kinect has the same problem that, in my opinion, that the Nintendo Wii did, which was it appealed a lot to this mind, and even maybe for the first couple of days, and then it just kind of receded.
Yeah. Well, except that Kinect, I think the primary advance there is the voice stuff, right? So Apple gets all this press about Siri and whatever, and Google has Google Now and whatever. But I actually, you know, they had this, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and it's way better in Xbox One. And I think the voice command stuff is amazing. And the Xbox, I really do think it's innovative. It's the way that it works. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, they'll come out with
a new one. But I can't say I leap off my couch to use it.
No, but you don't. You don't have to.
By the way, I have played the river rafting thing in my seat like this.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's a big improvement. You don't have to stand up.
The first month we had Kinect, everyone came over. I remember one time our babysitter called because she knew we had it just to say, look, I really want to watch your kids. Could you please go out so I could watch your kids? You know, and it was like, okay. But a month goes by and that's the end of that. Yeah. They never looked at it again.
No. And for me, the Wii was the same way. I even got Wii Fit. Spent some time trying to balance on that thing.
Yeah, we did too.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, ironically, the new Kinect is much better, but will it change the world? I don't know. I really like my Xbox One, though, I have to say. I just go in to say hi to it. Xbox on. Hi, Xbox.
You walk in the room, it will say hi to you.
Yeah. Hi, Leo. Hi, Xbox. What you doing? Staring at you in your underwear.
That's what I need. That's what I need my Xbox to actually do it. I want to think. You walk in the room and says, "What you doing?
What you doing?
What you doing?" Or it sees you reaching for the controller like you're going to turn it off.
Yeah.
What you doing?
Yeah, what you doing? I have to say, I've twice now had to reboot my Xbox. It just stopped displaying stuff or whatever, and I just shut it down and fixed it.
There are weird problems with it. Like sometimes an app will crash back to the dashboard.
I think that might be what's.
And actually, I think the phrase people have developed for that is, they call it dashboarding. Like you run an app, and instead of running full screen like it's supposed to, it goes back into that dashboard kind of
dashboarding.
Tile.
Dashboarding. I'm glad that's dashboard. A nice name. My so much nicer than crashing.
Yeah, it's better than blue screening.
It's dashboarding.
Yeah.
I just downloaded the new ESPN app, and you can watch ESPN live. And it really is. If you're a sports fanatic, which I'm not, but if you were, it would really. I could see how fun that would be. And I actually spent quite a bit of time in it. And I'm looking forward to what they got to get HBO Go and all these other apps. Yeah. And this thing could be the ultimate media center in addition to, you know, I could play my Rise. I'm waiting for some good games, but
that's on our list. I mean,
we'll get there.
I think 2014 is the year that the Xbox One games become truly interesting.
There is going to be a new Halo, isn't there? They scared me. They put like a top down Halo game.
Yeah.
$15.
I know, people get all excited. It's the mobile game.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's okay, but it's not Halo 5. Right. But that's coming.
Yep.
Titanfall. I'm looking forward to Watch Dogs. That won't be an exclusive title, but I think it'll be awesome.
Watch Dogs isn't the... No, what's the Tom Clancy one?
Oh, that's going to be great.
That looks interesting, too.
Yeah. Splinter Cell. No. That's really old.
I don't think it's Splinter Cell, but
no, it's not. I can't remember what it's called.
Tom Clancy's.
The Division. The Division. No, I think I'm sorry, Mary Jo. Every time. Poor Mary
Jo. It always comes back to the Xbox.
Yeah, we like our games.
I know you do.
Remember, it runs Hyper-V, so it's not all bad.
I know. There's some redeeming qualities.
This will be the year of the cloud for Microsoft. If last year wasn't, I think last year really was arguably the year of the cloud for Microsoft, but more and more, right? I mean, last year was the year Microsoft finally put Office in the cloud and had a subscription. And will this be the year that Windows goes to the cloud?
In some ways, right? I mean, other people, Citrix plus VMware or Amazon and some other companies have put, desktop as a service.
And Microsoft's building that too, remember?
Into Azure, Courtney right. Maharo. So that's going to happen this year.
Yep. We don't know when that'll ship, but they're building that. They're actively building that too.
Yeah, but I think the bigger thing for people will be not so much that, because that's kind of a corporate thing, right? Like a... for enterprises or whatever. But I think from a end user perspective, what they need to do is something along the lines of the Office stuff where they open up the licensing and make Windows behave more like an online service, even though it's something that you buy and you install locally and all that kind of stuff. But make it a system that you can license more freely across multiple devices. And I bet we do see that this year.
Yeah, so a subscription. Windows is a subscription, yeah. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, we could. And then we're going to see more enterprise stuff in the cloud. You're going to see more of the Dynamics, the ERP stuff in the cloud, and probably more Microsoft services at least moving to the cloud and transitioning to be hosted on Azure. So we know they're doing that with Skype, and they're also doing that with Outlook.com. They're putting more and more things on Azure, which as an end user, you're not going to necessarily notice a difference, but... it just makes you, if you're an enterprise especially, able to kind of have a more common base, subscribe to things in an easier way, have the single sign-on across all the different things that you subscribe to from Microsoft. So they're definitely trying to push people. It's almost like, hey, try this, and if you like this, maybe you'll pick up CRM online, and maybe you'll pick up Dynamics online. So
maybe I will. Yeah.
Maybe you will. Maybe you won't.
Is there a cloud-based Hadoop that I could...
Oh, yeah, there is. For sure there is.
And there you go. Let me just write that down at 12:19, 1 hour and 19 minutes of the show.
Hadoop.
Right. Hadoop. It's the drinking Hadoop. Show, folks. If you're, everyone's going to do a shot.
Every show has to have at least one mention.
Hadoop moment.
Right. Who had 1 hour and 19 minutes in?
Hadoop moment. Yeah, we should do a little pool at the beginning of the show.
Right. It'd be like Hadoop bingo.
Right.
Good idea. You have a link here to an article.
Yeah.
For, I guess, Paul, you wrote it, Windows IT Pro. Is Windows on decline facing the biggest problem with Windows in 2014? What is that biggest problem?
I use the word ambivalence in the article. A number of people have written me. I'm embarrassed to my editors that nobody caught this, but I think the correct word is actually indifference, not ambivalence. But,
ambivalent means you can't. You're like ambidextrous.
Make up your mind, right?
You can't choose one or the other.
Yeah.
Indifference is like, who the hell cares?
Which was my actual point, so I apologize for
ambivalence
that.
Not far off, though. I mean, it could. That's a nuanced shading. I
think. It's a nuance, yeah.
So you think people are indifferent?
Yeah, I do. I think that's the problem for Windows. You know, that if people were actually hostile to Windows in a general sense, I know that there are pockets of the world that are, you know, Mac enthusiasts and so forth. But if the general populace was actually just outright hating Windows, in some ways that would be a better situation because at least they were being emotional about it and caring.
Right.
You know, I think that people just don't care.
You and say Windows is in trouble because people simply don't care about it anymore.
As I wrote.
It's not hostility. Yes. Civilly. Yes. It's not outright hostility.
Hostility?
That word. It's ambivalence. Hostility. But I think indifference, you know, you could say ambivalence. It's like, well, we don't, you know, it's fine. We'll use one or the other. Ambivalence isn't completely inaccurate. It means I'll use whatever. And I think this is actually how most people feel. It's not. It is indifference, but they'll use whatever, you know, is thrust upon them.
I don't think that Windows was ever something that people outwardly desired. I think that people went to Windows for very pragmatic reasons. Like, I want Windows because everyone has Windows. In the early days,
that's exactly right.
My brother, my friend, my whoever has Windows, and they have this app, and I want to run this app, and it's on Windows, and that's where it was. And these days, the apps that people want to run are on Android or they're on iOS. They're not on Windows, and this is a problem. It's a problem you see in the fact that there are no major new Windows desktop applications that have been developed over the past several years, and it's a problem on the new side of the house because when you create a new environment like Metro, you also see not a single major new app only running on Metros or running on Metro at all. I mean, it's just, you know, whatever. And I think I've talked to people about this who are developers. It's interesting to me. A lot of people really respect the Microsoft stuff, the developer tools especially, but even the Metro environment. I just spoke to a guy from, actually I can't say where he's from. So, but I spoke to a guy from a major software company who said that his engineers actually thought the Metro stuff was pretty fantastic, which was far better than I thought it was going to be. But they just don't see any call to deal with it, to have to do a Metro version. And even their flagship kind of Windows products, which run on the desktop, are kind of just floating there, not really, there's not much going on there. I mean, all the action is occurring on the web and on mobile platforms. And that's where people want to do that stuff now. And that's a problem, you know, for Windows. So, you know, again, I don't know. People like to say things like the tablet killed Windows, or, you know, Chromebooks, the notebook, or blah, 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 whatever. And it's like, not really. You know, we've always wanted simpler things. We've always wanted less expensive things. We've, you know, whatever. I mean, we want to be where the apps are. It's not, there's no like single dagger. It's like Caesar, Leo.
Death of a thousand cuts. Yeah. It's kind of what we were talking about earlier. It's not something people jump up and down and say, I gotta has it.
Yeah. iOS, like something like iOS, for example. I think iOS in some ways suffers from the same problem. What people want on iOS are the devices because they're beautiful. And I think people like the fact that that's where they know when they get this, the apps are there. But I don't think a lot of people look at iOS and think, this thing is neat. You know, like this iOS thing is great. I don't really think people think about it like that. Most people, normal people, you know. I think there's the emotional part of it, which Microsoft has never really had, of the device. And then there's the pragmatic side, which is the apps. The apps run on it. And that's why people buy those things.
Right. You buy it because it's utilitarian.
And I think that's right. And that's one of the reasons they did the Surface, right? They want people to have an attachment to something they're building. Like, nobody says, I love Windows. Well, except for a few crazy people that Paul
some
and I
people
both
do.
Know.
Alex Gumpel.
Some people.
I love Windows.
I love Windows, but
he's a lonely
guy. I mean, we met the Zune tattoo guy this past year. I mean,
how is he feeling about that tat these days? Just to get
he had it removed, but he's still a Windows fan. He's still
had
a Windows.
It removed?
But there aren't that many of them. But Microsoft's goal is, you know, let's get people to love their Surface and really feel like an affinity to it. And more like people feel towards their iPhones and their iPads, right? And their Nokia devices.
Because if you don't love it, you know, I mean, eventually the time comes to get something new. And you don't tend to go buy something you don't love again, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Yeah. Wow, that's really interesting. I've been thinking a lot about this in the context of what we do. And I think a successful television show is successful because you have to tune in next week, right?
Right.
If you're indifferent to it, if it's just, well, it's on, that's okay. And TV shows, you know, I mean, most TV shows, that's the way it is. It's Thursday night. I guess I'll watch Cheers. But when you get attached to the people and you have to watch it, that's when it's real. That's the real success.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want that kind of success, but you know, it might be the ship has sailed on that for Windows. Don't you think?
Well, yes. I mean,
but a device, people can feel that way about a device. Maybe
right. It doesn't mean they can't get it back. I mean, obviously they're trying.
Right.
But you know what? I got to be honest though. The Windows 8 stuff. It's I think there's a problem there in that. They're shooting for something that's very dynamic and shows you all your stuff and you see photos and it makes you feel, you know, like you're connected to it in some way. And I think they've been pretty successful with that on Windows Phone. I don't really feel like they've been successful with that on Windows.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to explain why, but I don't think a lot of people sit there and look at a screen of tiles on a computer. You know, when you sit down in front of a computer, you have some kind of intent. I'm going to write something in Word. I'm going to send, you know, do an email. I'm going to browse the web. You don't really have time to look at tiles. You know, people who walk around in the world with a phone, they're almost looking for an excuse to do something. People often look to their phone to see if anything is going on, and then they go and do that thing. You know, they don't turn their phone on and go right to Facebook. They turn their phone on and it's like, oh, look, I have a Facebook alert. I'm going to go to Facebook.
Right.
You know? That kind of interface, I think, really works well on the phone. So far, at least, I don't know that it works so great on the a tablet or a computer, you know. And I think that might be part of the problem too.
Do you think it works better on an 8-inch size device? Because you looked at the Dell Venue Pro, right? I mean,
yeah, I try to use these things. And yes, I mean, I find, you know, it's funny. So let's turn this thing on real quick. I do this on my phone, and maybe my use is not necessarily the normal use. But, you know, when I look at my phone right now, for example, I can see something's happening in Facebook. I've got new email. I don't have this now, but you'll see an alert if you have like a new message or you missed a phone call or something. You've got like a calendar saying that something is coming up. And I've got like photo tiles, you know, animating through different photos that I like and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like this like dynamic thing. I got my weather app is freaking out right now. Apparently there's some kind of a weather thing going on. I find it a bad sign if there's a red exclamation point on it.
Probably Californian weather.
And it's windy. It's slightly windy. Yeah. Some woman's hair is being rustled in California. Oh my God. I do think on a mini tablet that you can get that same kind of thing. You know, we're still in some weird phase where we're not sure what the right size is or the best size or whatever it is for these tablets. But in portrait mode, maybe. I mean, I just think that the Windows, I don't know, these tiles, I don't know. I don't know. I'm worried that a lot of tiles for Windows apps don't do anything. You know, yeah, like the Internet Explorer is never going to do anything. SkyDrive doesn't do anything. Music, video, actually they can do things, but on my system they don't. You know, a lot of the tiles I'm looking at right now on my Windows computer are just giant icons.
Yeah, that's
interesting.
Yeah, that's not using the potential there.
Plus, you know, when you have a giant screen, you know, having like a square like this big that's orange and white and has nothing going on is not a
waste of space.
It's not interesting, yeah. So I see where they're shooting for, and I think it can be adapted to be nice, but I don't know.
All right. We'll have we hit all of the believe it or not, that was the first item in the rundown.
All right. One down.
All right. Luckily, everything else was quick.
No.
Don't worry, Leo. The rest of this is
you will
fluff.
Never get a complaint from me or really from any of our viewers or listeners, I think. They want to hear we're not in a hurry. This is not CBS. I have to say, I was watching, I don't want to name names, but I was watching one of the major networks cover the top tech stories of 2013. You know, the biggest.
That must not have been disappointing in any way.
Oh, my God. Mm. And the thing they picked as the number one number one story, the most important.
Please be Bitcoins. Please be
No,
Bitcoins.
No, it's worse. The most important story of 2013, the thing that we're so excited about is drone delivery services.
Yeah.
Wow.
And neither of the two people in the story bothered to say, which is completely impractical.
Wait,
never
Charlie Rose should have his credentials taken away from him for putting that story on the air. That was an embarrassment of epic for CBS to put that in 60 Minutes.
But the other network, not CBS.
No,
endorsed
and then for everyone
it and
to
said,
fall
yes,
for it, like, this
the
is
biggest
the thing.
Story like, of the year. It's like, come on. Actually, I'm glad. I'm thrilled because it's why people watch us.
Right. Woodward and Bernstein, were they still alive?
Spinning in their graves.
Would be spinning in their
graves. They're spinning. Of course, they're both alive, but that's all right. Actually, didn't Carl Bernstein pass? I think he did.
I think he did. Did he?
Jeez, I hate to kill people prematurely.
I know.
Can we check on that? I know Bob Woodward's still writing books. Maybe Bernstein's still alive.
I don't think he's dead.
I don't know why. I just see the guy smoking too many cigarettes.
He looks really young. Every time I watch that movie, he looks great.
Still alive. He's still alive. Sorry, Carl. I have a lingering resentment over Carl Bernstein because my one and only chance to become a professional actor is working for Francis Ford Coppola on a radio play.
Oh.
Lead role. Really excited. Yeah. I was really enjoying it, really getting into it. And Coppola, he's sitting right there and he looks at me and says, Leo, do it more as if you're Carl Bernstein. And I had no idea. I mean, I knew who Carl, I don't know what Carl Bernstein sounds like. What did he want? I don't know.
Why would you? So did you make the sound of a typewriter clicking?
I said, yes, Francis.
What does that mean? You know,
I started to talk like this. I didn't know what to do. So I, you know, I was very, it was like, okay, that was the worst acting direction I've ever gotten. And maybe, you know, the truth is maybe that, you know, you're just supposed to know. The next day, he fired me and hired Father Guido Sarducci for the role, who does sound so much like Carl Bernstein.
Yikes.
Don Novello. To his credit, Don Novello had worked with Coppola before in the movie Tucker. And they're, you know, this is it. It, you know, just want to tell you, in the Hollywood, it's all about who you know. My career, my nascent acting career, nipped in the bud.
I'm sorry.
And that is not a made-up story, as much as it sounds like it might be. I didn't just throw in the words Francis Ford Coppola, Carl Bernstein, and Don Novello for fun.
Sure.
Actually,
this
happened.
Episode is all over the map. By the way, I feel at least partially responsible for this.
I'm still a little bitter. All right, so Windows 7, Windows. Okay, I'll give you the three most recent versions of Windows. Actually, one is not in there. Vista's not in there. XP. I don't know what happened to Vista. Windows 7 and Windows 8. Let's talk about sales figures. Right. Nobody's buying Windows XP, I believe.
They're not buying it, right. And they're slowly getting rid of it, which is
well. I believe these are not sales figures; these are
usage,
right? Usage stats.
Believe
from,
it or not, the headline in this story from CNET is Windows 8.1 closes in on Vista.
It's like a news alert: iceberg is closing in on Titanic.
But I would argue you have to add 8 and 8.1 here to have the true stat here.
Oh, yeah. It's Windows 8.1 right. only, so let's look at 8 right. and 8.1 together. Yeah. Windows 7 is still number one, right?
That's Windows funny. 7 is number one and growing. Last.
What?
It's still growing. That, for Microsoft, is a problem. Well, it's not. Actually, I shouldn't say it that way. It's good because they're still selling Windows, right? But they don't really want to see that number growing right now.
Yeah,
this is from Net Applications, which tracks web usage. So you might throw a little salt on top of this number.
Yeah, sure. But if you add up Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, they're finally over 10%.
10.5%. Yeah.
Finally, in the double digits.
Windows 7, though, 47.52%. Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah. And part of that is enterprise, right? Because a lot of enterprises are still in the midst of deploying Windows 7. So that probably incorporates that. It incorporates people still buying Windows 7 laptops who don't want Windows 8.
Okay,
or it can get a cheaper machine.
So let's just recap. Windows 8, 10%. Windows 7, 47%.
Right.
Windows XP, 29%.
I know. Yeah.
29%. Yeah. How old is Windows XP?
Of that do you think is that's got to be business users almost
it
exclusive,
is.
Right?
It
do
is.
Do they even Although, have a browser in Windows XP?
Right, right.
Yeah, a lot of people, using IE6 still there.
By the way, Windows XP is so old. That
How
the browser,
old is it, Paul?
The browser in that OS, I think, was the inspiration for Firefox. Isn't it this thing behind me? It's because they didn't improve IE enough, and they made Firefox.
Oh, my
which,
God.
By the way, now nobody uses. Like the whole world has changed.
And I would have thought prior to seeing this statistic that, it's a lot of servers in the closet. They're not being used by real people. They're just left over. Yeah. They're old. But this is measuring web traffic. This is measuring people browsing the web. So these are actively in use. Mm-hmm. Wow. Right.
Yeah, and XP users, I hear from them all the time on my site. And a lot of these people are not just corporate customers, but they're people who have...
They're real people, either, frankly.
They've developed their own apps. Yeah. They're using apps that can't be ported over to Windows 7. They're using peripherals like printers and other peripherals that can't be used with anything besides XP. And they're cheap, right? They don't want to spend more money. If the thing's not broken.
Yeah. Right. And I get calls all the time. The radio show, I almost feel like the vast majority of people who call the radio show are using Windows XP.
That's incredible.
And those are real. That's the real. To me, that's the real people.
Certainly, we live in a bubble of sorts. I mean, because we have to cover the new thing, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
What's interesting to me, though, is not that people are still using the last thing, or maybe even the thing before that. They're using the thing from like 12 years ago.
The thing before the thing before the thing.
You know what we always say about Windows XP around here is they made it too good for its own good.
Right? Well, partly
that's a
nice
problem to have, I guess, but
partly it's because of the negative response to Vista. Right. But then Windows 7 came out, which I don't think anybody disagrees is probably the
Vista is why XP is so popular.
Right.
XP as a first ship was not very good, actually, and people forget all this stuff.
No,
but it was
Service
full of security
Pack 2
problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. XP Service Pack 2 could have been called a whole new operating system.
Yes.
Right? And probably should have been.
Now I bet they wish they had called it a new operating system.
Well, and Steve Gibson hails that because that was the upgrade where Microsoft decided to turn on the firewall. By default, and that changed a lot of the security issues on the web. I mean, it was a very important update.
Yeah, and, on server too, by the way.
Yep.
That was as big.
However, I expect a slew of calls if people even pay attention, because March or April, XP stops getting updates. Actually, you know what? That's when the calls go away because people will say, "Oh, you know, I haven't had a problem with Windows Update."
April 2014, right? Is when this happened.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. I think this was foretold in the Bible. What was the name of this?
Something about frogs falling from the sky.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There are horsemen involved, I think.
What do you think? Will it be just, this is off topic again, and given that we have, you know, plenty of time, no problem. But what do you think will be the security ramifications come May and June? With XP not being updated, there certainly are holes. I mean, it is. Let's face it.
Off, right? Does Microsoft cave again?
Yeah,
and continue support?
Right. Well,
or
if
do they not cave and then potentially open up millions? How many? What percentage did you say were
29%?
30% of 1.5 billion people.
That's a half a billion people.
That's how many people run, right?
400 million people.
Don't think they're going to cave again, though. I really don't think they are.
But imagine an internet with 400 million connected computers that have the first guy to come up with an exploit for XP in May.
It would be irresponsible of Microsoft not to release security fixes for things that could have the potential to damage the internet.
And here's Apple.
Or they do something like they make them super expensive, but they issue them. And they say, if you want them, pay.
No, but the...
Give them a free copy of Windows 8.0, whatever.
That's the thing to do.
You know?
Why not do that?
Because a lot of them won't upgrade to it.
Do an amnesty program.
They're having problems with their peripherals
and
software.
It's just like immigration. We're going to solve it the same way.
Yeah. Bring us your guns and Windows XP and or Windows XP.
And we'll help you.
We'll give you Windows 8.1.
It's
not compelling.
It's really, it's
Microsoft last year in 2013, they told their channel partners, their resellers, their systems integrators, they said, your number one mission in 2014 is to get these people off XP, however you have to do it.
Right.
That's your marching orders.
Right.
Get them off the operating system.
But I look in the window of the banks here, you know, they leave the computers on at night. They're all running Windows XP on the desks.
Yeah.
Every one of them. I guess the IT department probably thinks we'll keep them safe.
Yeah. A lot of people, I've had people say, well, you know, unless Microsoft encourages people to attack it, nothing's going to happen. I think that's just sticking your head in the sand pretty much. Microsoft said, if you're running XP after 2014, you're in a perpetual 0-day state as far as they're concerned.
Lord.
Yep.
This really could be an Armageddon. I mean, all it takes is one guy to find an exploit, and on April 9th, the day after,
right,
and that exploit gets widely disseminated, then you've got 400 million plus computers that are absolutely helpless.
And I hope it's going to be based on Visual Basic 3.
It'll be the VBDLL.
We found an exploit. Yeah, VBRun300.DLL.
Yeah. If I were a hacker, I'd be working on it right now. Well, because they don't have to work.
I'm sure they are.
They have them. They have. I guarantee you, they have a chest load full of exploits.
It's possible that the embarrassing thing that comes out of this is the outing of the companies that are still XP heavy, right? That some major company will be hacked because they're running Windows XP, and it'll be silly.
Our major enterprises, I believe, including banks and insurance companies that are running XP
and doctors and hospitals and dentists.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. There are major, major critical, mission critical systems running Windows XP. This isn't in your list, but certainly one of the predictions that is absolutely going to come true in 2014 is going to be, and I say this every year, and it's gotten worse every year, the year of the hacker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Crypto Locker is small potatoes.
Yep.
What happens?
We do have some hacking stuff that we're never going to get to based on how we're doing
so far. All right,
so
moving along. But... Chromebooks. Wait a minute. The old Windows Guard continues to flee or be pushed.
We should mention this because we've talked about this a little bit on the show before. So two of the longtime Windows engineering chiefs have left the building at Microsoft. John Devon, who was the lead on Windows 7 and also Windows 8, I believe, as far as...
He was the guy that sent out the letter, congrats, we did it, to the employees.
Right. So he's out. He left Microsoft at the end of the year. And so did Grant George, who headed up testing. So the team that was building Windows 7 and Windows 8 was Steven Sinofsky, John Devon, Grant George, and Julie Larson Green. And the only one left at Microsoft now is Julie, and the rest are gone. This happened, Paul will probably remember this. This happened when Microsoft did Vista, right after Vista shipped, everybody who was connected with that also left. or at least left Windows. Right, they left.
Well, John Devon, he was kind of bumped out of the Windows org a few months ago, but now you're saying he's gone from Microsoft.
Yeah, he's gone from Microsoft. Grant George also gone from Microsoft. These guys aren't going to another team. They're totally out.
Wow.
Yep.
So, you know, and Hal Berenson wrote a good post today. He used to work at Microsoft as one of the distinguished engineers. And he said, you know, everybody has different views on what this means. I can tell you these guys were really good engineers and they're out now. So take that as you will. Don't just necessarily celebrate it as they were the scapegoats and now they're gone and everything's going to be better because they were good engineers. But Terry Myerson's running the show now, right? He's running the Unified Operating Systems team at Microsoft. He's brought in his own guys, and it's a whole different cast of characters now.
I don't think about it as celebrating. I certainly have no personal animosity toward any of these people. It's interesting. I mean, obviously someone like Steven Sinofsky was very divisive and polarizing. But everyone else, you know,
do you think that maybe they're going off with Steven Sinofsky to start a podcast?
I wondered that.
Start a Windows podcast. That would be awesome.
A little nervous. I am. I'll tell you right now.
They could be, or a startup. Perhaps they're all going to get the band back together again.
So. Isn't that anything these guys have proven? They don't know much about Windows, so we don't have anything to worry about.
Ooh, hey, here's a business. They could start a business supporting XP.
Yeah.
That would be good, maybe.
Could a third party could provide patches.
We're going to make IE6 safe for the web.
That would be a good business.
Well, that is a business. It's called Chrome. You know, I think the way you make Windows XP safe online is you start using Chrome.
Yeah. Or a Chromebook.
Yeah.
Before we talk about the Chromebook, let's mention the Lumia 520. You got an article about this. I like the 520. That's the sweet spot phone, isn't it?
Yeah, I tried to avoid a bunch of 2013 wrap-up type stories. You know, I did one for Windows IT Pro where I talked about the cloud and so forth, but I did write a story about Windows Phone and about how this was such a decisive year for it and how important Nokia is to the ecosystem, how important this particular device is. You know, if you were to look at worldwide use, Windows Phone, it's not in the article, I apologize, it's just in text. I don't have a chart of it, but Windows Phone 8 handsets used worldwide, the percentage that are either a Lumia 520 or a derivative of the 520, 54%. 54% of all Windows phones actually being used are of devices that have been on the market for about 6 months and cost $100 or less.
That's the key, the price point.
It's amazing, right? And I've not written the story yet, but I will write a story soon about the importance of unsubsidized phones to the marketplace. Because this week, one of the big news stories, we don't have it in here, but Motorola made the Motorola X available unsubsidized for $399.
Yeah.
They have a Motorola, I don't know, I don't even know their model.
The G is $179.
You can get a Nexus 5 for $349.
Yep.
And you can get the Lumia 520 $99, you know, roughly. So there you have your little range of low-end, mid-level, and kind of high-end phone, the Moto X being the high-end one. I think that this kind of thing is going to revolutionize the smartphone market this year. I think this is going to be one of the biggest things that happens this year is this kind of thing.
It's
I think
good huge, enough.
Yeah. Not just good enough, but in the case of the Moto X, a great phone.
It's my phone. I have every high-end phone there is except the 1020.
Yeah.
And I choose the Moto X as the one to carry around.
There are other things about the Moto X that I think are really interesting. They don't have a lot to do with unsubsidized, you know, the fact you can customize it and so forth. But I do think this is going to change everything. I think the clear loser here is going to be Apple from a market share perspective because they don't want to play this game.
Yeah.
And then the big question mark is going to be Windows Phone and how this impacts Windows Phone because the 520 has sold really well, as have the 521, 525, whatever. But these phones cost like $99. So you're selling a lot more of them, but I don't know that they're making money on them. And so it's a very interesting story, and we'll see how that goes. But certainly for this year, the 520 has been the biggest thing that's happened to Windows Phone ever. It's humongous.
And then the next big story really should be inexpensive data plans. I think the company, these cell companies are really taking advantage of
And they're
customers.
Doing it, right? So you're starting to see that. T-Mobile did it first.
Yeah.
Verizon are copying them.
$30 a month. That's the price.
Yep.
I want $150 $200 phone, to $200 phone. $30 a month.
Even for someone like me, I have two phones that are on plans. You know, like I have a sort of a family share plan I do by myself because I'm an army of one. But I...
I mean, too. Except I foolishly, it didn't work for me because I put them all on different carriers.
No, sorry, that's not wise. But it's expensive, and I don't use the minimums aren't minimal enough. You know, if I actually paid for what I used, I would save a lot of money every month.
Yeah.
And this change, yes,
but you're unusual because those are not phones. They're testers.
No, excuse me, I know that, but you know, right now I'm using a 1020 as my daily driver. I've been using that for a long, long time now, but. I do use a phone like a normal person. I mean, my normal phone is there too. So I have other phones that I test,
right.
But I can swap SIMs out and use a different phone. And that's how I test things. But it's amazing to me that, you know, I'm fairly tech savvy. I like to think I have my finger in the pie there a little bit, but I don't come even close to using my allotment. And I could go much lower on things like
I'm the same way.
Text messaging, calling, especially.
Well, that's why Ting is a great deal. You pay for what you use. I mean, there are MVNOs like Ting. Republic Wireless is being very aggressive in its pricing. And I think that those bottom feeders are going to end up really sticking it to. And T-Mobile, too. Although, Sprint buys T-Mobile and say goodbye to
that. Big change on the Windows Phone front. I don't remember the statistic, but T-Mobile is now the second biggest carrier for Windows Phone in the United States after AT&T. They suppressed Verizon this year.
Yeah.
Because they sell a 521, which is
there you go.
Verizon doesn't have one.
There you go.
Have nothing on Verizon still.
No. They are not a friendly carrier.
Right. Not getting better.
To manufacturers, better. Not to humans, but to the phone manufacturers. You know, they really, maybe because they keep a tight lid on their network or something, I don't know, but they really... Maybe because they want bigger subsidies. I don't know. Can we talk about Chromebook
they're
now?
Supposed to get...
it's all right.
Let me ask Paul one thing. When are we supposed to get that Lumia 920? Is it the 920 or the 925?
929, the Verizon one.
The 929.
That was supposed to come out in November. I don't know what happened.
I know.
That didn't come out yet?
No.
Basically, what that phone is
they sent me a review unit. I played with it, and they still haven't released it.
It's a 1020 style phone, but it has, I think it's a 5-inch screen.
I was thinking the 928. You're talking the
929. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the 929.
No, and it has the camera from the 1520. It's like the 25 megapixel version.
Oh, that's the one I want.
That would be nice.
Yes, that's the one. That looks fantastic.
And that was more than a rumor. That was
It's happening. Yeah, it's still going to, it will still happen, but you know.
I bet they talk about it at CES. That would be my bet.
Yeah. I don't know why that hasn't happened yet. It's so silly.
I think we're going to see a lot of phone news at CES. Although, usually companies wait till Mobile World Congress a few months later.
Oh, yeah.
But nowadays, it's such a fast-paced, competitive business that we're seeing iterations on phones every few months instead of every year. Mm-hmm. In fact, I should put together a list of phones announced at last year's Mobile World Congress.
Yeah.
Because all of them have been, you know.
Are you going? You're not going to CES?
No, we have people going. I'm not going to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither.
But I think, you know, I do this every year. I say I'm not going to go. And then I start to think, oh, maybe I should go. Because I'm starting to see some of the announcements that are coming. And
the thought of going to Vegas and dealing with that crowd is not enticing to me in the slightest. Yeah.
We've got some good people going down there, and we'll certainly have coverage. You know, Father Robert Ballester is going down.
There's stuff that occurs off Scott of the show Wilkinson. In hotel rooms.
Well, that's right.
Let me rephrase that.
And that's what I go for. Oh, you're talking about meetings.
Technology companies who are meeting with the press.
Yes.
That I would be interested in. But it's not worth flying to Vegas.
Yeah. We're going to let other people do our work for us.
Yeah.
Thing is, it's such an overcovered show that it's not like if you don't go, you won't know exactly what's happening.
Oh, did something happen? I wasn't there. Please do tell.
Right.
Exactly. Could you let the rest of us in on it?
Well, as long as we're on CES, you're saying a couple of predictions. One, that more Windows PC makers will introduce Android-based device. Will there be, there? You know, was it 2 years ago that the hybrid Android-Windows device was big?
How long ago was that?
That was horrible. That's gone, right?
Never happened.
There was one. They announced Asus it. Asus do something. Never did them.
Lenovo
was the one that announced the one he's talking about. And then they didn't do it. But yes, there are some. I'm sorry. There are some now.
And what will we see? Hybrids, or will we see dedicated Android devices?
I bet hybrids, but I don't know for a fact.
Yeah.
Frankenstein's monsters.
I know. I want to meet somebody who uses this or wants to use it.
And then make them explain themselves.
Right. That's what I mean. I want them to tell me why. And I know they're going to say apps, right?
But
run BlueStacks, right?
I guess. This kind of thing doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No. But I think we're going to see that. And also people like HP announcing Chromebooks and Android-specific devices, right, too. People who've been Windows partners.
Our industry's version of Judas, you mean? I'll just keep bringing the Bible on this for some reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. You've been doing a lot of reading and thinking and soul-searching, Paul, of the last few days.
Right.
I could tell.
I've gone
back
to the classics this week, Leo.
The Bible.
Does your reading list say Gideon on it?
Bible, Julius Caesar.
You know what his book pick of the week is going to be?
We're going to find out soon. Right.
The Bible.
I, Claudius.
There are so many Bibles on the Audible.
Are.
Oh,
I know,
gosh, yeah.
Sure.
I just want to get through Deuteronomy on my walk, you know, like... And... Lotus begat.
Paul begat.
Begat.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's good. That would be good.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah. And Visicalc begat Lotus 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
Which begat Excel.
Right.
Which begat a million typos. We will. Now, Microsoft stopped having a booth last year at CES. They're not going to be there this year, right?
They're going to be there in Paul's suites. Backroom suites, but no keynotes or anything like that.
No, not even a keynote.
No.
Didn't Steve Ballmer do like a farewell keynote last year? Maybe not.
A couple years ago, right?
Two years ago, because last year was when he showed up at...
there was nothing.
Was it Qualcomm's?
Yeah, he was in Qualcomm's keynote, yep.
Keynote, yeah.
So any Microsoft presence at CES will be muted.
Very muted. Yeah.
Although Microsoft doesn't always have to go, since, as you point out, manufacturers go. We mentioned the 8-inch tablets. Mm-hmm. Internet of Things, I think we all agree, is going to be, you know, where it's going to be. There's going to be a lot of, remember, CES is all about the future. It's not about what's available today, but what might be available in the fall if enough people show interest. So watches and other wearables, wired
giant TVs.
Giant TVs will all be there.
Cars, OLED, you know, entertainment systems in cars, all that junk.
And TechRadar says the Internet of Things.
Yeah, I hate that phrase, by the way.
I know.
The,
I do too.
The Internet of Things.
Yeah.
Who came up with that?
Who knows?
Get the torches, Leo. We're going to this guy's house.
It is an interesting phrase.
It is.
It's
as nebulous as cloud computing.
Is a move
as calorie-free as a donut.
Computing power is no longer centralized, but it's moving to the periphery. And what we're not seeing is a spoke and hub model, but rather a peer-to-peer model of smart stuff.
Yes, it's called chaos, Leo.
Oh, that.
The chaos begins. I'm going to see who coined that. I'm looking in the
Internet of Things.
Kevin Ashton, 1999 of... Kevin Ashton. He's not Ashton Tate, is he? No, that was another Ashton.
Is it? No, no.
Kevin Ashton. The Internet of Things. It was in the RFID Journal.
Oh, wow. He was the very first?
According to Wikipedia, and you know Wikipedia never lies. But
they're always right.
This is a 1999 article. That's, if he wasn't the first, he was early. The Internet of Things.
Well, for some reason, though, this phrase has run this year. Like, it's...
Yeah, well, you know, 1999, it was just a twinkle in Kevin Ashton's
Even the Internet was not understood. Yeah, so the Internet of Things was probably pretty early. Further misunderstood. Yeah.
Yep. He's a British technology pioneer who co-founded the Auto ID Center at MIT.
Oh, wow.
Well, so, yeah, he was big into RFID, and that's why he would have coined that term, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Sensors and all that for the Internet of Things.
I always loved that idea. You know, I remember someone telling me the story that you would go to a supermarket and they would have these little micro tags on everything. And if you were registered with the supermarket, they would have your credit card information, whatever. You could bag your stuff and just walk out the door. And as you walk through, you would be charged because all of the little items would have their little tags on them and they would know exactly what you bought. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful system this would be. I'm still waiting.
Walmart tried to insist on that, remember? Some years ago, they said all of our suppliers have to put RFID.
Has anyone used a self-checkout counter at a supermarket had it actually work?
No.
Ever?
The irony of it is...
I broke down in tears the first time I tried to use one of these
every
things.
Time you use it, a human being has to come over and fix it.
Every time.
Every time.
Every time.
So the net gain is zero.
I think so. I don't know. I just...
You don't have fewer
checkers. I find it very frustrating.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
The worst one I used was at a drugstore where it announced everything in a very loud voice.
Yes.
Condoms, extra small. Right.
Anti-flatulence medicine. Bob, how much is the anti-flatulence?
It's a gas egg.
Anti-flatulence.
In a robotic voice. That was a bad idea. Never used that anymore. But a lot of people in the chat room say they use it.
I don't even know if we have it here. In New York, I don't think they trust us.
They don't trust because you just walk out the door. You know, yeah, sure, whatever.
I've never seen
one
here.
Like, imitating the beeping sounds of the machine, and then they walk out with a bag full of food. Here's your print. You know, they rip off a blank piece of paper and walk out the door with it.
Somebody in the chat room said, and this is true, it makes you, self-checkout makes you appreciate the checker more.
Yes.
Yeah. The live human.
Who knew that these people were some kind of expert, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a real skill. All right, Chromebooks. NPD did a little press release saying that Chromebooks had dominated sales in 2013. I think they said that 21% of all PCs sold, PCs and tablets, were Chromebooks.
Except that's not really what they said.
No, see, it's spun out of control.
This is like that Amazon drone story.
It is.
Where this, taken out of context, is complete baloney. It's not what happened.
Well, what did happen, Mary Jo Paul Theron?
First, I got to point out, the number that they were talking about was business-to-business sales, so it's sales in the channel. It wasn't
commercial
sales
channel computing device.
Consumers, right. Yeah. It got reported everywhere as 20% of all laptop sales were Chromebooks.
Yeah, I feel guilty because I said that. Everywhere. Yeah, and I should have read the actual NPD report.
And the subheadline was always, they're destroying the Mac. That, by the way, that is not true. That's
you
not
saw
true.
Say the iPad. Mac. I saw iPad. Microsoft.
Yeah, most people said Microsoft should really be scared about Chromebooks. This is this justifies the Pawn Stars ads and all of that because they legitimately should be terrified.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I'm saying is that 20% figure is incorrect. That's all.
Right.
Chromebook take 5% of the PC market in the United States? You know, whatever. I don't know. Neither does NPD, apparently, because they didn't write a story about it. But NPD only measures retail sales in the United States. That's all they measure. They're accurate. Microsoft uses them, by the way. Microsoft trusts MPD. These numbers are accurate, but they're for a very specific market. And this particular report was for a very specific kind of sale, not sales to end users, not sales at retail to people or whatever, B2B sales. So.
Right. Now, all that said, should Microsoft be nervous? Sure. They should be nervous about anything that's coming into the market, right? And I've seen a lot of reports saying the market that's really picking up on Chromebooks is the education market. And if that's so, they should be afraid, right? Because they need to dominate that market. And they have never really done so. I mean, Apple's owned that market much more than Microsoft.
You don't want people who are going to be entering the computer, the market as adults to be learning on Chromebooks. You know, I mean... for the same reason that you as Microsoft don't want them to be learning on iPads or whatever. Like, you, it's the same thing. You don't want their early formative computer years to be spent on competing devices.
Right. But, yeah, those headlines just spun out of control. And then it was coupled with, I saw another report, a separate report saying the two best-selling models of computers on Amazon.com were Chromebooks. Did you see that one, Paul?
No, I didn't.
And
that's been
again,
the case for a long time.
Right. That's been the case. And that's about price, right? Like, that is totally about price. Yeah. People want to
like
buy
netbook
a cheap
sales.
It's exactly like netbook sales.
I wonder what the top two most returned computer devices are on Amazon.com. I wouldn't be surprised if they were Chromebooks.
Right.
But you don't really see them publicizing that kind of data.
No. And there is a group of people for whom these are good and fine and just the right device, I think. But
shut-ins? What kind of people are we talking about?
I think children. I think my mom would be okay with a Chromebook. I do.
I mean, by the way, there are exceptions to everything, but I think most normal people, if you will, just to really generalize, would be better off with a tablet.
Yeah.
You know, that's all. Yeah. I think that's the point. The problem with the Chromebook is you look at it and you see computer.
See PC. Right.
It's a web browser with a keyboard attached to it. And I do think that Chromebook, because it has and will continue to improve, is going to get better and will become more and more applicable and more of something you could compare accurately to Windows or the Mac or whatever as a competitor, you know. But as of Christmas 2013, not yet.
Yeah. So just a 20%. Word of caution.
20%. I took this past week off and I saw those headlines and I was like,
"You were fuming." I could feel your anger.
Try not to write about this. I love it when it's okay.
And I really should check with you before we repeat stories like that.
No, it's just why?
No, it's. Sorry. I saw somebody talking to Stephen Baker from MPD on Twitter saying, "You guys should have had somebody vet that release." And he's like, if you've read the release, it actually said what we were talking about. But people just jump on things and when they want to write a quick headline, right?
Yeah.
You can't expect more
and more. It's getting more and more like that, you know, because the news cycle or whatever, the need for speed is so high now.
Yeah. It's a telephone game.
And frankly, I'm going to have to up my game. And I know, you know, we've kind of upped our news game here in general because we got to vet all this stuff now. You can't just, you know...
Right.
Read these stories.
It's also hilarious to read something you write as an author and see other people rewrite it and just completely mangle what you said. And
then
you're like,
and get the link bait headline and
let's take it to the next level. I'm sure you've gotten this one as well. And if you haven't, I'm going to break down and start crying immediately because I get this all the time. Paul, have you seen this?
Yeah.
And it's a link to some blog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who covered a story that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rehashed it. Paul would be interested
to
hear this.
See that blog's version of what I wrote. But thank
Paul
you
would
for,
be very interested
to know
this.
Thank you for thinking enough of me to forward it to me.
You have my vow, my New Year's resolution, because I fell for that story because I didn't read the original source. And usually I try to do that. I try to click through to the actual.
Sometimes
in this case, honestly, this one was viral. Like it was kind of mindlessly repeated on every tech blog on Earth.
And then that gives it credence. So I read it in 400 times.
It's everywhere.
And you're like, must be true.
Oh, no. Right. That's what I mean. And this is from my perspective, I'm sure from Mary Jo's as well. This kind of thing is damaging to all of us. Like it's just not accurate. And
and then if you refute it, you're being a Microsoft apologist.
Yep, right. Well, of course you would think that, Paul.
Right.
What data do you have to suggest otherwise?
Yeah, I'm like, but I'm not saying not Surface is better. I'm just saying this isn't what the number says, but okay.
This just in, almost 100 million people are in the path of a big snowstorm back east.
Did you read that on a blog?
I'm reading on CNN. Right after they did the story, you know, the middle class can no longer afford Red Lobster.
Really? Wow.
There's apparently a Red Lobster index.
Where are the people going to get those cheesy bread things?
Olive Garden. Oh no, they can't afford that either.
Jeez, it's not the same, Leo.
I just want to be better than that. That's all, and I don't want to repeat those things. So I'm going to get serious. Blizzard warning expected with winds. 100 million people.
No snow here yet. No snow. I can tell you.
Yeah, let me do a little tech prediction. I'm going to be shoveling within 24 hours. Oh, my Boston Red Sox sled activities were canceled.
Oh, that's I don't understand.
Yeah, that's what they call it, Boston Red Sox sled activities.
Because there's going to be too much snow, you can't go sledding.
You can't go sledding. There's too much snow. Okay, I'm okay.
Okay, there's too much snow. You can't sled.
It's crazy.
I don't understand. No, they're afraid you'll get trapped in Fenway.
Boston Red Sox.
That's my dream to get trapped in Fenway. I want to stay there till next spring, when they start the hot dogs boiling.
Right. With the snow.
they take the snow melt and they boil the dogs.
They take the dog, right. That explains a lot. Actually.
They never stop those dogs boiling. They boil all summer. Surface, the original. I don't know why you'd buy the original, but I guess $299 is some incentive. Yeah. I would still buy a Surface.
I'm using mine.
Yeah, you are.
I've kind of switched Windows to the Venue. I've been using the Dell. I moved to the Mini.
Really? You like the Venue Pro?
Yeah.
With Windows 8.1, Surface RT, it's usable. You know, it's not super fast, but it's definitely usable.
And it's just as good using Notepad as anything else.
It is. Notepad is a rock on my Surface.
Notepad never. What did you call it? Headboards? Dashboards.
Dashboarding.
It no longer dashboards. Dashboards.
Dashboarding.
Maybe if they put Notepad on Xbox One, Mary Jo would get an Xbox.
I know. Everybody says that. It'd be tempting.
Why don't they? Somebody's going to do that. Good. I am waiting. It seems like the App Store is laggard there on the Xbox One. Seems like there's just some apps they ought to have by now. Mm. HBO Go being one of them.
Oh, I did other apps other than Call of Duty, Leo. I haven't noticed.
Yeah.
I thought it was just dedicated hardware for Call of Duty.
Skype's Twitter account was hacked by a pro-Syrian hacker group.
That's awesome.
I know. That's kind of crazy.
What did they say? Capitalist
Stop
pigs.
Stop spying.
Skype must
Stop
die.
Spying.
Did they? Oh,
Skype.
That may not be a pro-Syrian hacker group. It could be anybody.
It was the Syrian Electronic Army who did it.
Right? Oh, okay, yeah. I've heard about them. I don't know if they're actually from Syria.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think they are, but I don't know. Yeah.
Well, no one knows. If they did, they didn't know where to find them.
Yeah, so they got hacked yesterday, and the tweet and their Twitter, Facebook, and the Skype blog all got hacked.
Really? All at once?
Yeah. Wow. And then it said, stop spying on us with Skype, and also said, stop using Outlook.com and Hotmail. We're going to have more on that later. Kind of hinting they're going to do something else. Yeah.
I'd like to take this moment to announce my next book, which will be about Outlook.com and Hotmail.
I do love that apparently, according to Der Spiegel, the NSA was spying on Windows crash reports, those dumps files.
That's actually not a horrible idea.
What's in there that you could use?
Well, innards about how Windows works, right? It gets revealed by them. I think it was Peter who...
Oh, looking for flaws, in other words.
Yeah, in other words, I guess these things are sent in the clear, right? So you can intercept the crash reports?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not encrypted. The crash reports are not encrypted. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, just more fodder for why everything needs
this
to be.
This is the NSA backdoor in the Windows. It's the crash reports.
Yep.
We were just looking in the wrong place.
There's none of my data in the crash report, though.
Isn't there, Leo? I don't know. Actually, that's a good question. I don't know. Yeah, maybe there is sometimes.
There's no identifying data, right? They can't tell it's you, right? But they can tell, like, it's a computer running set program, so
right. The question is... You. It would tie it to all the other stuff.
The Internet of Things, Leo. That's how they find you.
Yeah. They can, you know... It's not so hard to figure out who you are. It really isn't. And, of course, we saw the story that NSA was intercepting hardware deliveries, embedding spy stuff in them, and then sending them on.
That actually explains why my UPS stuff comes at 7:30 at night.
It took us a little while.
Like, this Throck guy seems to be in pretty tight with Microsoft. Maybe we should be spying on him.
He gets a lot of stuff. I think we better check him out.
Yeah, he does get a lot of stuff. That's true.
You mentioned it as a code name of the week a couple of weeks ago, Midori, the melon ball operating system.
Exactly.
What is Midori, and why is it Microsoft's other operating system?
Yeah, so this was another interesting report that happened over the holidays. So Midori, I've written about it a few times, and it's an operating system being developed at Microsoft that is not Windows-based. It's based on a microkernel that's not Windows at all. And there's a whole team at Microsoft who's been working on this for at least 5 years, maybe longer. And the reason it came up this weekend was one of the people on the Midori team, Joe Duffy, posted on his personal blog a whole bunch of information about the language that they've been developing alongside Midori. And the code name of that language is M-Sharp.
M-Sharp, not C-Sharp, but M-Sharp. M-Sharp.
Right. And M-Sharp is just basically a derivative of C-Sharp that I believe is tailored to run on multiprocessing systems.
Interesting.
This has been pretty secretive up till now. And suddenly on December 27th, he dumps all this stuff about M-Sharp onto his blog, which was kind of strange. So I asked a couple of my sources what was going on, and they said, we've heard the Midori team has now moved under Terry Myerson to the operating systems group at Microsoft. So supposedly, Terry Myerson's job now is to look at all this work they've been doing on Midori and deciding how it fits into Microsoft's future operating systems vision. So these two things that happen, not exactly simultaneously, but pretty close in time, are leading a lot of people to wonder, why did Joe Duffy suddenly put all this information out there? And what does it mean about Midori? Is Microsoft going to do something with it? Are they going to just kind of keep it in its own separate space as a research type incubation project? Are they going to take parts of Midori and move them into the Windows group somehow and do stuff with it? There's a lot of questions and not a lot of answers, but at least we know, or at least we think we know, Midori's alive, and the M-Sharp language may actually be released as open source at some point in the near term.
Very interesting.
Which is kind of crazy. Yeah.
Very interesting. We're going to take a break. When we come back, tips, picks, and more. A reminder, if you like Windows Weekly, and who doesn't, if you in fact love Windows Weekly, and who doesn't, that next week we'll be at a new time. We are going to be Wednesdays instead of Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific. Same time, new day, I should say. What do they say on the networks? Windows Weekly moves to a new day, but plenty of wacky laughs coming up. Right. 11
the same wacky laughs.
The same old fun and games. Just a new day. A very special new day. Hump Day, Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC.
Now Microsoft's going to change the day they announce their corporate earnings.
I figure this will this will change. This changes everything.
Yep.
I figure that's it. It's a must-see Wednesday. anyway. Just a reminder, starting next week, Wednesdays instead of Thursdays, but all the same fun. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com, the greatest source of audiobooks the world, the galaxy has ever known. I'm an Audible lover, and so is Paul. We have yet to get Mary Jo listening, but we will. Someday, There's a few. There's always a holdout. And, you know, I'll be honest. Not everybody loves audiobooks. But if you do, you know what we're talking about here. It is, and I figure since a lot of you listen to the show, you probably are ready for audible.com. Listening is a great way to read. When you can't hold a book, like at the gym, on the treadmill, or while you're driving, walking the dog, it is 100. I think it's more than 150,000 now books at audible.com. And all the new stuff always comes out. So when the new book is out, you could pretty much, like the new John Grisham, Sycamore Row, been listening to that. That's awesome. You can immediately go there and download it and listen to it. I've been listening, right now I'm listening to the book you recommended a couple of weeks ago, the Everything Store, the story of Amazon that Brad Stone just wrote. And what a great book. In fact, I've been really kind of inspired by Jeff Bezos' philosophies, and the book really talks about it. It is such a good book. What are you listening to, Paul?
Well, if anyone was paying attention to what I listened to last year, I listened to a lot of Stephen King, and I kind of joked about it and promised I would eventually get off of that kick, and I did. And now I'm listening to books written by Stephen King's son, Joe Hill.
Well, that's diversity. Actually, I was really curious as if this was a good book.
Yeah, so I've read a couple of his now, and I've actually got a third queued up, which is all short stories. Nosferatu, and the one I just finished is called Horns or Horn. I don't remember, but they're
it's
both
such a good name because
Stephen King. They're Stephen King books, and I mean, they're, you know, it's like reading a Stephen King book. I mean, they're kind of amazing, and they share some similarities with Stephen King, and that they're a little overly long, both of them, Horns and Nosferatu, but. They're both kind of great supernatural, I guess you'd call them a horror stories. But Nosferatu in particular is really good, and it's narrated by Kate Mulgrew. And
I love her.
The
Captain,
reading is fantastic.
From, Next Generation. Yeah.
From Janeway, and also
Captain
from
Janeway.
Orange is the New Black, if you watch that on Netflix.
Oh, she's Red.
She's Red, yeah.
Oh, she's so good in that show.
Yeah. So... what's interesting is I had read a Stephen King or listened to a Stephen King short story over the summer that I think was called The Gingerbread Man or something like that. And I thought this was the same person. I really loved the reading on this. And actually, the person who read that other book was, Mayor Willingham or something, some name like that. Some name I don't really recognize. But this book is fantastic. And it's the reading in particular, I should say, is what puts it over the top. So... kind of a Christmas-themed vampire kind of thing. And it has, you have to really pay attention, but there's a quickie tie-in to Stephen King's latest book, which was the Dream...
it's nice of his son to do that.
Yeah, cool. It was kind of a cool thing. And the reason that's kind of special is because if you read all of the Stephen King stuff, you know that he references his other books as if they're events that happen in a real world. So he'll... talk about the dog that attacks some people up in Derry, and he'll mention this town, or he'll, you know, have books to take place in the same place and so forth. And so his son kind of did that with this book where, again, very briefly, but created this situation where what's happening in this book, in this world, occurred in the same world as of the world of The Shining and the Sleep Doctor.
It's a world of its own.
Yeah.
Captain Janeway wasn't in The Next Generation. That was, of course, Patrick Stewart.
No, she was in Deep Space.
Voyager.
No, not Deep Space.
Voyager. Yeah. Like I know. I don't know.
Voyager. Yeah. Who was the original captain on Voyager? Remember they had to get rid of her really quickly?
No, why? Drug problem?
She didn't want to do it.
I cannot wear this rubber headpiece any longer.
Yeah. Oh, geez. They shot a bunch of, like, the first show, and she...
Really?
Yeah, let me look it
That's
up.
That's trivia.
I'll look it up.
Let me tell you, this is a great chance for you to get into Audible, as we have. The first one's free, kid. Go to audible.com/windows. You can sign up for that gold account. That's going to get you a month free. First book's free. You also get the daily edition, audio edition of either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, another nice thing to have in your car as you're going to work. And you have 30 days. If you cancel in the first 30 days, you pay nothing and keep the book no matter what. But if you decide to become an Audible member, you will join a group of many of us here at Twit who just live. I got to read this book, How to Run with a Naked Werewolf. I don't even know what it's about, but I got a... Oh, it's book three of the Naked Werewolf series. That's a kind of a link bait title. How to Flirt with a Naked Werewolf, The Art of Seducing a Naked Werewolf, and now How to Run. I think this is a young adult book. I hope it is. Anyway, audible.com. And by the way, that's a good point. Audible has all kinds of books, including books, great books for young people. audible.com/windows. Try it today free for 30 days.
So the actress who originally played Janeway?
Yes.
I'm not going to say her name correctly. I apologize. It's like Genevieve Bujold.
Genevieve Bujold.
Genevieve.
She's great.
Yeah.
But she's a movie star.
Yep. But I guess she was pretty terrible on this show.
She was a French movie star. But Captain Janeway. I'm Captain Janeway.
Was she in like Coma or what was her
big
thing?
Yeah, she was in a Crichton.
Or maybe was she the woman from...
She was in a lot of movies. I like Genevieve Bujold.
Oh, Coma. She was. It was. It was Coma.
Coma, yeah. She didn't have a lot of lines.
No, no. She was one of the awake people. You know, Tom Selleck was one of the people in Coma.
Was he wearing short shorts?
Probably. It was like 1970s.
There's a man I can really get behind. Oh, God, I can't believe I said that. Our show today, brought to you by Audible.com, and now we move on to our tip of the week, a New Year resolution.
I'm going to blow through this one because we're like an hour and a half over time.
Oh, there's no time but, like Windows Weekly time.
You know, as we do this time of year, I always think of like New Year's resolutions, and I try to apply them to kind of the tech thing. And there's a couple. I should probably just write these things up, but... looking at the new year and, you know, kind of an attempt to remake yourself from a technology perspective, four things I came up with. One is just to be secure. Yes, everyone seems to use the same passwords.
Easier said than done, I might say.
Well, we have some pretty good tools now. And so you should be using complex and different passwords on every single one of your online accounts. And you can manage them with LastPass or some kind of a tool like that and back it with two-step authentication so that someone can't hack into your account and steal it. And you should be applying that two-step authentication to all of your accounts that accept it. You know, Gmail and Google do it. Microsoft does it with Microsoft accounts, SkyDrive, Outlook.com, et cetera. Dropbox does it. I think Twitter does it. You know, lots of places do this now. And so just, you know, take the steps to secure. You know, you don't want to become like the Skype guys on Twitter and have your account be hacked. The other one, of course, is a brown backup. And I can't step through a backup strategy for you right now. But from a high level, I would just say, You want to have some form of local backups, and Windows has this capability built into it. Windows 8.1 does, certainly. And one that's in the cloud that's like offsite backup. And so it's like onsite, offsite. And so you want to have a backup you can access very quickly if you need to. That can be local, but if your house burns down or your computer is stolen or whatever may happen, you want to have that cloud-based thing going on as well. The other one is, and I don't know if this is a big of a problem for everyone listening to this, but I tend to sign up for services, and then I often don't use them, including some that I even pay for. And in my position, I like to test things. And so I'll test all of the music services. I'll test all of the cloud storage services and all that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of people probably do have these open accounts that are sitting out there. And if you're not using them, you should get rid of them. You should actually close those accounts.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah.
And, you know, figure out which one is best for you. So if it's music services, you know, you have all the different choices. I mean, look at how you actually use these things and pick the one that actually makes the most sense for you, you know. Whatever that may be, Spotify, Pandora, whatever. The other one is just kind of based on something I don't want to call this an epiphany because this is an incredibly dull thought, but it did occur to me late in the year after spending a lot of time investigating these do-it-all kind of all-in-one transforming computers that we're also big on in the Windows world these days that, you know, maybe the best approach really is to not worry about that kind of thing and just use the tool that makes the most sense for you from a hardware perspective. And so in my case, if I'm traveling, that means an Ultrabook for work because I work, you know, that's how I work. I type. I can bring a mini tablet along for entertainment and so forth. And of course, you need a smartphone. And I think we spend so much time trying to bend the way that we work to match the requirements of these devices, whether it's adding a keyboard to an iPad or, you know, packing your bag full of, you know, these device types that don't necessarily make sense for what it is that you're doing. And so just kind of looking honestly at the hardware in the same way that you should be looking at your services and all this other stuff I just mentioned. You know, and picking the things that make, or sticking with the things that make the most sense for you. So That was 30 seconds of how to change your life. And I hope there are no questions.
Good luck.
Good luck. And see you next year.
See you next year. Now give us a software pick of the week.
I just wanted to mention again, just for the updates time, that every month Microsoft gives away two games to Xbox 360 users who have an Xbox Live Gold subscription. And the first of those two just came out, and the next one comes out on the 16th. But this month they just happen to be Sleeping Dogs and Lara Croft and The Guardian of Light, which are just kind of random games. I actually have never played either one of these titles, but I do think it's a cool benefit. And if you're already paying for this thing, these games both retail, I think, for $19.99 or $14.99. And some of the games they've given away over the last several months have been incredible. Gears of War was one of them, one of the Halo games and so forth. So,
is it too late to claim last month's benefit? Or?
No, yeah, it is. So you have, that's what I mean. You want to be sure to get in there twice a month, because the first half of the month you get one game, the second half of the month you get the second game. And so you should be paying attention to this every month. I just wanted to bring it up again because I probably used this in the past, but it changes every 14 or 15 days. So just be sure that if you have a 360.
No, I have a 360, but I have an Xbox Live account on my Xbox One.
Yeah, so it's the same account, but they don't have Xbox One games that they're giving away at this time. So right now it's still on the 360. So if you think you'll have any interest in playing any of these games, I mean, it's just something to pay attention to every month.
Or as Mr. Mike says, I have an OG Xbox.
An OG Xbox?
Original Gangsta.
Right.
It's a rap thing. You just wouldn't understand. Sleeping Dogs now and Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light later.
Which, by the way, to Lara Croft is like that Halo game you were talking about, kind of a top-down looking thing, not a...
When it comes to Lara Croft, I don't mind.
Well, she's like a tiny little sprite in this game.
Oh, okay.
Like the Mario princess.
Top down used to be great, but I feel that it's
once you've run around in a real world,
anachronistic. Yeah, that's all they could do in the old days. Feels like we've gone back to what the original Duke Nukem or
Yeah, sideways scrollers.
Yeah,
sure.
Our Enterprise pick of the week from Mary Jo Foley.
Yes, this was one that kind of snuck out during the holidays, too. If you go over to Microsoft's Office 365 technology blog, they did a post on December 19th about some new abilities they've added to switch between Office 365 plans. This is a big finally, because they talked about this in August, and they said, we're going to make it easier for you to switch plans. And they made it a little bit easier in August. They made it easier to switch within plans, but now you can actually switch between plans. So if you're a small business subscriber, now you can switch to either midsize or enterprise. And if you're a midsize business, you can switch to enterprise. The caveat here is once you switch up, you can never switch down. Oh. So be sure that you want to be a midsize plan or an enterprise plan, because once you're up there, you can't go back. But yeah, there's a whole post
one before they had a business edition.
Right. Yep. And people who were trying to switch before, they were having that like take down the whole thing they had built up and move tenants onto a new server. It was a big mess. People were always complaining about it. So if you go to this post, they walk you through step by step how you can actually get into the switch plan feature now on the licensing page.
It's good.
Very handy.
Thank you, Microsoft. And finally, normally here we would have a code name of the week, but this rumor is too good. And it's kind of about code names anyway.
It is. And it's kind of a crazy one. So I'm going to premise this with, I got this rumor from a source who has been somewhat accurate in the past, but not always. And the rumor was, what do you think Microsoft's official name for Threshold will be when it comes out in 2015? So, you know, a lot of people have been debating what will Microsoft finally call that thing? And the tipster says, count how many letters are in the word Threshold. There are 9.
5, 6, 7, 8. Windows 9.
That's what the tipster says. I would not be surprised if this is true, because if you think about the reception for Windows 8 so far, it's been not probably what Microsoft wanted. So why not just change the name when you're up to the next major release to Windows 9, just like they did with Windows 7, right? They said, hey, this isn't Vista, this isn't that old thing anymore. This is a whole new thing. So that's, I don't know if this is true, just from one source with a mixed record, but it could be
and
true.
And a numerological bent.
It's kind of a crazy one, but it's one of those things you're like, yeah, they could do that. Why not?
I guess.
And that may not even be the reason if they end up calling it Windows 9. That just might be a crazy coincidence, right. But still, right. Kind of fun. Fun tip.
And it wouldn't be Mary Jo Foley, and it wouldn't be Thursday if we didn't have a beer pick of the week.
Yeah. So I even though Paul would have hated this beer, I drank this beer. I premise a lot of my beer picks.
You do that a lot.
I picked this beer because of the bottle, and I had to save the bottle to show you because it's so cool. Can you guys see this bottle?
It's got a purple moon reflecting on a placid sea.
Right.
It is beautiful.
And there's no name, apparently.
No name.
But it's from a brewery called Omnipollo, which is known as a gypsy brewery, which means the brewers go around to other breweries all over the world and they use their facilities because they don't have a
there's
dedicated
such a thing. Facility. Wow.
There is. Not and these guys are really cool.
Do they play the violin while they do it? Dance by the light of the moon?
Well, this beer is called, and I'm probably going to massacre the name here, Fata Morgana.
Oh, Fata Morgana. You know who that is. Fata Morgana.
It means oasis, right? So this label is supposed to be an oasis in the desert.
This is a
double IPA.
It's a mirage.
Yeah, a mirage. Sorry, yeah. I said oasis. I meant mirage. Yeah. It's a double IPA. It's one of the brewers was, his roots are back in Ethiopia, so he had a lot of affinity with desert things. And I was just thinking, that's one of the reasons I think beer is so fun, because there's all these weird fun stories and fun names. And it's almost like code names. I think that maybe that's why I like it.
Yeah, another and that reason. Explains the moon over the sea. That's a Fata Morgana.
Right.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's... This beer is starting to get around. I got it at Whole Foods, this bottle. So
they
if you see
really
it,
they have a really
good
beer selection.
They have
amazed.
A really good beer
selection. Yeah.
Yep. So if you like double IPAs, I would highly recommend this one.
Although I went in there the other day and I said, you have the Schuf. And the beer guy, the buyer, said, what? I don't know that. And that did not encourage.
Not.
I could buy Le Schuf locally in a number of places.
Yeah, that worried me a little bit that he didn't even know the name.
Right.
Maybe he thinks of it as Schufer.
Actually, the place we usually buy beer has like three Schuf beers. You know, they have Le Schuf and Mick Schuf and whatever the IPA is.
You know, we had, and I didn't open it because I knew I'd drink it if I did, a Magnum of Chimay Blue for midnight.
That's oh, awesome. Wow.
Yeah, we ended up giving it, I think, to Ryan Marsh, our lighting guy, our gaffer.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, he was very happy about it.
I bet.
Oh, the Chimay is fantastic.
I love Chimay. Is blue better than red, or is it just different?
They're just different. I think they're all great. And they have that anniversary one they do around the new year that is also fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a fan. By the way, breaking news, Alicia Keys no longer represents BlackBerry.
Oh, the mighty
surprising.
This was.
I hope she can bounce back from this.
A job loss she didn't really regret. Mm-mm. And I did mention that the middle class can no longer afford Red Lobster. I did say that, didn't I?
Okay. Yeah.
Very important story.
Yeah, we're still reeling from that one. I don't know what to think about that.
Meanwhile, a storm will affect millions later today, and I hope it doesn't disable Mary Jo or Paul Thurrott. I could just imagine 8 feet of snow in front of the front door, unable to exit.
Panic ensues, yeah.
It's not looking good.
Can you give us one more shot out the window?
It's
there,
so dark. I don't know if you could even see it.
I know. It's
dark.
Pitch
it's 4:30.
It is pitch dark outside.
Oh, look at that. Oh, the weather outside is frightful. Inside, it's sure delightful. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It looks like it's not snowing anymore, though. Yeah,
I think it's supposed to hit here a little later.
Yeah. So no snow yet?
No snow yet.
No snow
yet. The heavy stuff's happening overnight.
That's kind of the story of my life. I don't know what that means. Ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded the last Thursday episode of this show. We will be Wednesdays from now on, starting next week, January 9th, January 8th, actually. Right. Paul Thurrott is still the man in charge at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Please check him out there. Mary Jo Foley's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul's books are, of course, at Amazon. Just search for Therat. But pay particular attention to his last two, which are available online, windowsphonebook.com. Mm-hmm. And don't tell me, Windows, I don't remember, 81book.com?
Yes.
There seems to be a naming convention. I should probably remember this from now.
Yeah, it was written by a dullard and designed to be remembered by anybody. So.
And the Delphi 3 Super Bible, which is on display right over his head.
Yep.
Like the sword of Damocles. Yeah. You wouldn't want that to hit you in the head. Thank you, guys. And again, once again, thank you for being part of our New Year's Eve festivities. It was really great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
It was a lot of fun. Well, I think what people really liked was seeing our hosts out of context, doing stuff other... Yeah. Well, Paul playing Call of Duty is not exactly...
Yeah, it was pretty much you just seeing me.
But it's fun for them to see other stuff. People love you guys, and so it was really fun. We've already decided to do it again next year, but I won't call you so early.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.